We are Brightside
That we'll get into it in a moment. But yeah, so I had a play with Odyssey yesterday, and that was very interesting. It was better than I thought it'd be, but in the end, I had to switch it all off.
Oh no!
So and that was quite
this
hard.
This is gonna all in the show. We're gonna you've been working what a couple weeks on the Paul Hurt back.
Yeah.
Where you're the expert. Why don't you open that? I mean, typically I don't get into this stuff with a Takeover Tuesday and stuff. We go informal, but I think we need to go a little bit formal because we're going to get into some stuff here. Honestly, you and I were talking. I think this is going to change a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get your credentials out there first. And then we'll get into your investigation and then we'll talk about what you found.
Well, for a start, I didn't expect to be back on quite this soon. So anyone who's been listening for a while, I think I did one in March with you.
Yeah, something like
beginning
that,
of March or so. So, and then suddenly you reached out to me and went, I think we might need you back on for something. And I'm going, oh yeah, what's that? If anyone heard the last podcast I did, I talked a bit about my background, but I've worked in sort of TV sound for the last 20 years or so. And prior to that, I was a recording engineer and musician in the music industry. And I slowly transitioned from purely doing music and music recording to television. I just fell into it by accident. Hang on, just turn myself down in my own ears because I'm deafening. Sorry.
Well, that's okay.
So it's like I'm going to start whispering. I'm going to turn into Whispering Bob. You probably don't know who Whispering Bob is, but,
no.
there's a whole thing. You know, it's so loud in my ears that, I'm going to be talking very quietly. Sorry. Maybe you can edit that out. I started doing television sound. I started doing sort of live music shows for TV about 20 years ago. And from there, I went into more general television sound as well. And then I was doing a lot of mixing in surround for MTV and for Channel 4 over here and things like that. And I have also done some movie work. So I've done some mixing, some recording and mixing for film. Which is related to television, but it's done a slightly different way. And in some respects, very different way. But also, of course, I've been into home cinema since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
As we were talking about, you know, my 8mm film of Star Wars that I had when I was like 10. But sound has always been my sort of main interest.
Yeah.
And so we started getting into this whole
That's how we started, because Danny Speakers put it out.
That's right.
And then I listened to it, talked about it on the podcast. And they were basically talking about reference level, talking about how everything's mastered differently. And the podcast itself, it's been a couple of weeks since I've listened to it, but if I remember right, it was like, they talked about the music industry literally not having a reference level. And what they would do is they were talking about compression and how the music industry would be like, look, people buy loud. They want it to be loud. So they were mastering it in a way that it would just play loud. And that's what people wanted. But when you do that, and without getting into the nitty gritty of that, because we've got plenty home theater nitty gritty to get into, but you're taking away the dynamics for the sake of the entire track playing loud.
Yeah.
And what the gentleman said in that podcast was, sometimes the quiet is like, that's what you want. You want it to play quieter so that you have that dynamic and that full range. And that's part of the art and stuff. It's a really interesting podcast. So it set you and I down this path of like going back and forth with home theater and how there is a reference level. And we were talking about like the benefits of it. And then you started to look into what is reference level and what do we got? And now, what do you got? It's well, because there's so much.
If anyone listened to that podcast that Danny recommended, I totally agreed and totally understood everything. I've forgotten his name. Everything the interviewee was talking about, who owned like a boutique record label, didn't he? So he was putting out sort of super high quality stereo and then later surround recordings, mostly sort of live recordings. But he was talking very specifically about the music industry and music releases. And as I was saying, music is mixed and mastered in a very different way to movies. And the thing that, sorry, Mika's just wandered in and got bored and walked out again. He's just like, oh, what are you great. Doing?
Home anyway, theater nerds, we just got an eye roll from a dog.
Yeah, he was like, oh, God, you're going on about home cinema again, aren't you? Music is, as you say, music is done very differently. And in the music industry, there are no standards. And generally these days, everyone, all the labels want things crazy loud on disc. And that's a whole thing, a massive bone of contention. Movies are mixed differently. And the reason for that is that if you think about music, if you take a single song, it's pretty much the same sort of volume all the way through, you know, from start to finish, unless you're talking about, say, classical or maybe some jazz, but certainly with rock and pop, it's pretty compressed and it's kind of one level at the start and it pretty much stays that sort of level through to the end. And you listen to it at all kinds of different volumes. So you listen to music, you know, some people listen to music on their phone, you know, just over a little phone speaker, you know, and then everything up to a massive hi-fi system and, you know, absolutely blasting it. So, and it works at all those different levels. You can still appreciate a piece of music kind of playing on your phone, you know, you can kind of hear the lyrics and hear the vocal and, but at the same time you play it on a big system, big and loud, and it sounds great as well. And the reason you can do that is because it's so compressed. Movies are wildly different because a hour and a half movie will contain just a massive dynamic range, huge. So you have sort of dialogue, which is designed to be, you know, audible, speaking level. And then you'll have the little background sounds, you know, the air conditioning or some machine running in the background or wind in the trees, which will be even quieter. And then you'll have the spaceship blowing up or the robots hitting each other, you know, the explosion, which is deafening. So you've got this massive range of dynamics.
Paul, for a second.
Yeah, sorry.
You and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Let's define compression too. We're not talking compression here. We're talking audio compression. When you take your highs, you bring those down, you bring your lows up. It's like, we're not talking about digital compression, about like what happens with streaming versus physical and this and that. It's like, we're talking audio compression you describe it, you'll do a better job than I do.
Yeah. Compression is a kind of dynamic range limiting. So if you have an audio signal with quite a wide dynamic range that goes from a whisper to a shout, you can compress it. You can use an audio compressor that basically, I'm trying not to get too technical here, but right. basically makes the louder bits quieter. Or yes. conversely, may make the quieter bits louder, or both at the same time.
Right.
And so, you know, say you had something with a 15 decibel sort of range of dynamics in it, mm-hmm. that say in terms of sound pressure level went from 70 dB to 85 dB, so more than doubled in volume, you could put it through a compressor, you could put that signal through a compressor, and reduce the dynamic range of it so that the quiet bits are still, say, 70 dB, but the loud bits might only be 78, 79. So it pulls the gain back when things get really loud. And therefore it just evens out the range of dynamics in a signal. Thing is,
people use it all the time when you put your TV into night mode or your sound bar into night mode. That's exactly what happens. It brings the quiet up and the loud down so that you can watch everything at a reasonable volume and hear everything.
Yes, that's right. Cause, as I say, you know, movies and TV generally have a big wide dynamic range, and sometimes you don't actually want that. You know, if you're trying to listen without waking up the kids, you want the explosions to be a bit quieter and you want the dialogue to be a little bit louder. But compression in movie soundtracks and movie mixes doesn't feature that much, not the way it does in music mixing. In music mixing, there's a tendency to compress everything, every individual right. instrument, whether it's the voice or the drums or the guitars, or there's a bit of compression on everything. And it's done to give it a certain sound, a certain character. It's not really done to kind of reduce the dynamic range so much as to give the bass a certain kind of sound. And you also compress the overall track. So when you've finished mixing, you put the whole mix through a compressor. And that compressor not only slightly reduces the dynamic range, but it just gives your mix a sound, a kind of slightly more intense, a sort of thicker, bigger sound that people like, and A&R people like, and record labels like. So, there's lots of compression going on in music. There isn't so much going on in movies. If you're mixing a film, you may use a little compression, maybe on the dialogue, if there's a lot of other noise going on, if there's a lot of background sound and you're fighting to make the dialogue audible over the sound of a battle in the background or something, you might use a bit of compression just because it makes your life a little bit easier and makes the dialogue a bit more audible. But on the whole, movies, you try to keep the dynamic range of all the individual elements in the mix. And that's part of the reason why, you know, it can go from 70 decibels of dialogue up to like 100 dB of, you know, of spaceship blowing up. And that is one of the great things. I mean, it's one of the things we love, isn't it? When, you know, we're talking about the sights, the sounds, the scenes, and you're always picking out, you know, everyone's always picking out, you know, the great moments, the audio moments in movies where, you know, your system
shows off our gear, really.
Yeah.
It'll show off everything you've worked hard, whether it's a living room or a dedicated room. We do this, and it's like, you can't wait for something to be like, oh, it's working.
Yeah, wow.
It's my system's working. And that's what we get so excited about.
Are my subs working? Are the subs working? Oh, God, yes. Oh,
there they are.
I think they are. It's, you know, we love all that. But it does make things quite hard to manage. Because you got to watch out. You know, basically, you want the dialogue to be audible, and the dialogue is at a certain level. Mm-hmm. But then you also don't want the explosions to deafen the audience, you know? So you have to, as a mixer, you have to be aware of like where you are and what you're doing. Because you could, particularly with digital audio now, you can have such a massive dynamic range. And I'll talk about one movie that does have the most ridiculous dynamic range in it. Later on, because I've been through about 20 movies and got a feel for how loud they're mixing them and how much dynamics there are in them and what they've done. And it's been quite interesting. I apologize to anyone listening if this is getting crazy technical, because you might be thinking, oh, good God, I don't really care. I mean, you know, most of us came to this from hi-fi, didn't we? We came to it from, you know, sticking a VHS through a stereo amplifier and then just turning it up until it sounded good. And a lot of us still work the same way. We still just turn the volume control up until we think it's about right, and then we watch the movie. But I think also everyone has experienced the thing of turning the volume control up, thinking it's fine, and then suddenly something blows up on screen. And you're like pinned to the back wall, and you go, oh God, that was too loud. And so now you're turning the volume down, but then you've turned it down a bit, and now you can't hear the dialogue. And you're like, oh, should I be able to hear the dialogue better? So you're turning it back up, and you end up with this crazy dance where you're turning the volume up and down the whole time.
Right.
And just riding the volume all the way through the movie, like, you know, finger on the remote. And that's, you know, you really just want to sit there and watch the film. So there's this concept of reference level, and we hear this all the time, don't we? It's that,
me in particular, because for a while now, not since I started, but I'm like, you know, I listen at reference level, which is, you know, on any receiver, if it's either 0 dB, if you have it set up that way, or it's -85 would be considered, that's reference level. And, you know, starting off, it's like, what I like about that is, yes, I know I can set my at a certain place and go, this is what I'm supposed to be at. And then I don't have to do that whole back and forth thing. Mm-hmm. And then I can analyze, if I watch everything at that setting, I know which movies sound louder, which sound softer, which are this or which are that. And and we've talked about it on the podcast before. It's like, that's one of the nice things compared to the music industry. There's nothing, there's no baseline. There's no, like we said, there's no reference level. And, you know, so we've talked about reference level on this podcast probably ad nauseum the last 2 years. People, you can't do it. It's hard to do. It's impossible to do. Nobody can do it. And then people are starting to come around to the idea of, okay, yes, room treatments help, and I can get to reference level, and I can do all of this. And it's like, and yes, room treatments do help. You shouldn't be putting those in to get to reference level. You should be putting those in because they need to be in.
Yeah.
Flat out. If you want to have a good sounding system. They are as important as speakers for the good sounding system. Right. Totally. And it's like, so, and a lot of people think, oh, you don't need that because I can hear. Yeah. But that's, you're only hearing, you know, now you've got to hear what you want it, what you're supposed to hear, not what is bouncing around your room.
Yeah, we could do a whole separate podcast on room acoustics.
Exactly.
And it does, and there is a lot of intersection between the whole idea of reference level and sound pressure level and room acoustics.
Yes.
And how you and a lot of the way because reference level is something that exists across the movie industry and also in the television industry. The concept of there being a reference level, a level that you mix at and a level that you listen at. And reference level really, the whole evolution of cinema sound really and standardization, that's really what we're talking about, is the standardization of cinema sound. In that, you know, in the early days in the 30s, when sound in film first came along, you've got the problem that different cinemas, you took a film print to one cinema, sound one way in one cinema, and then you take it to another cinema and no one could hear it. And you take it to another cinema and it's way too loud and everyone's putting their fingers in their ears. And so they realized they needed to standardize the way sound worked in cinemas fairly early on. And they made some efforts in the 30s and 40s to standardize the way soundtracks sounded in the cinema. And a lot of what they settled on was actually came about as a result of the acoustics of a typical movie theater in the 30s and 40s, and also the kind of sound systems they had, the kind of fairly flaky by today's standards, incredibly dodgy sound systems. But they standardized how movies should sound, or how theaters should sound back then, you know, for better or for worse. And we're kind of still stuck with it, because having established a standard, we kind of had to stay there, you know, even though now there's a lot of talk about, well, you know, we got all the standards wrong in the 40s, and but they were still trying to standardize things in the 70s. And so it's a constant evolution of how sound in the cinema should be.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're still working on it now. They're still
revising it. They still use horsepower when they're talking about, like, space shuttles. You know, Seinfeld had the joke about that. He's like, why are we using horsepower? Like, all of a sudden we're going to lose our technology and we're going to use horses to get to the moon. It's like, and we need to know, we need a million of them to get going. But it's like, you know what I mean? Once you set a standard, you just stay there, and then it's easier. In a way, it's easier to track the evolution too, the progress, because if you were to change a standard, rename it and do something that would be more appropriate for today, well, then you lose touch with how it started, right? Yeah. In a way.
And also, if you start changing standards, I mean, you know, if you suddenly announce, right, all movies are going to be mixed differently, they're now going to be this loud and they're going to sound this way and have this sort of EQ curve on them, every single movie theater would just go, what? Now I've got to change everything. I've got to change my system. I've got to put we know what it's like when, you know, you switch analog television off and everyone has to have a digital television to be able to watch TV. And, you know, well, the standards changed, they had to change, but it caused a lot of pain for a lot of people. Well, you know, movie theaters, you know, struggling to make money, and then suddenly you tell them they have to put a new $60,000 sound system into all four screens. You know, it's not going to go down well. So, plus it means if you change the standard and then you pull out an old print from 10 years ago, well, it's going to play differently on your system. So now you've got to accommodate that. So it's sort of gradual evolution rather than a sudden, okay, scratch what we were doing. We're going to do it all differently. And so we are lumbered to a degree with the way movies were in the 40s, 50s, 60s. But at least we do have a standard. And so that standard, this concept of reference level, and reference level is the level at which you are supposed to play back a movie. It exists right across the industry, and it is supposed to be the same everywhere. So what we mean is that the perceived loudness of a movie in the dubbing theater where it's being mixed for release, that's, we get that.
Are you getting the time. Droned?
Yeah, it's a great neighborhood here. Yeah, so the level that you hear a movie in the dubbing theater when it's being mixed should be the same as the level that it's heard in a cinema. Mm-hmm. And that should be the same as the level that it's heard in your living room on your home theater system. And that's the idea of reference level, is that if everyone sets their volume to a calibrated reference level, everyone hears it at the same volume. And without that, we would be lost. We would be in big trouble, you know.
Right.
Because you don't get the luxury that you do with music of just making it quieter when you want it quieter, or making it louder if you fancy having it louder, because a movie will suddenly take your head off if you start doing that.
Right.
This is a big discussion, and I feel like I should jump to the kicker.
Because you're like, you and I already know everything that's going on here. And it's like, I feel like you feel bad about this information.
This is going to upset people. Yeah. This is going to be controversial, and it's going to upset people.
That's why I'm here. Because you and I have gone back and forth a bunch about this.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's as negative as you do. But I am Mr. Brightside. It's like, but I'm also, I think... with your perspective, your professional perspective, and then I'm going to come in on the DIY perspective. And you know, as the consumer type. But I don't think it's as negative as you do, but I think that's what's going to make this great. So jump to it. Let everybody know, because
what is the one thing we keep hearing from people about reference level when, but in home theater anyway, you know, if I can't run my system at reference level. It is so loud. There is no way I can run it. It's ridiculous. If I set my system to 0 dB calibrated reference level, it is deafening. And I have to run it at -8, -9, you know,
-10.
Exactly. And some people are down at -15. And I think people feel like they're not tough enough to listen to things at what's wrong with me? I can't listen at reference level.
Right.
Well, the answer is, oh God, we've all been getting reference level wrong.
Yep.
For the last, at least the last 10 years.
Is it 10 years now?
What is going on and what's causing our concept of reference level to be incorrect for listening to movies in the home has been known for since 2009 and definitely nailed down in 2013. I've got a big pile of notes here. ATSC A85 is the standards document that figured all this out and made this clear to everyone. Here it is. Here's the long and short of it. If you want to put your home cinema system at reference level and you've calibrated it either with Audacy or with an SPL meter and you've done that whole thing of
Dirac,
a tone of through
things,
it and 75 dB and setting all your speakers at 75 dB reference level, proper reference level, like you would have in the cinema or a dubbing theater or anywhere else, is at -6.
And we'll get to why in a second, but what we've been, and again, you and I have been over this, what we've been listening to, our systems are still going at zero. I mean, with that, you know, Dirac, all these systems are calibrated and what we're running is when you get to zero is that's what we thought was right. That's what I've been listening to. I've been, you know, That's what I've been saying. That's what we've known. That's what you're trying to get to. That's what we've all been trying to get to.
Yeah.
And if you get there, great. That's well and good because you still want to be able to do that. But at the same time, with the information you've found, and we started talking about this, 2 weeks ago or something like that. And I have for the last 2 weeks, even last week's show, all my reviews, everything, I've been listening to everything at -5 since then.
Okay. Have you? Yeah. Since you and I talked about it, and you
recommended it. And I was like, really? And I'm like,
and how did you get on?
Well, we'll talk about that as we go along. here's what I'll tell you. It's what it's done for me. It took a little bit of getting used to at first because I'm used to a louder volume, right? And it's very, very slight. It's not that big of a difference. But going back to -5 from listening at zero all the time is, I didn't feel like I was missing anything. I didn't feel, just like, okay, now what? But what ends up happening is when I watch a streaming and it does seem to compress too low, I can go to zero. And now what it's enabled me to do, and I think this is what we're going to find out when we start talking more about where you got this information, how you came about this, is that what I'm allowed to do now is everything is more consistent across the board.
Okay.
All of my everything I'm listening to, because now I have the ability to go where I would never go to -5. I'd just be like, but now I'm at a -5 on a stream and I'm like, well, this is streaming. So I'll just be like, boom, go to zero. And it'd be like, ooh, this sounds almost as dynamic as physical. Almost. It's still not as dynamic. I did all of my tests again, all of my sound, like my, scenes that I like to do when I get a new set of gear or something like that. Did it all at -5 and I've done it a couple of times actually obviously I did it when I first did it to hear the difference. But then I let it go a week or so of me just watching everything in my theater at -5. I don't even notice a difference because I feel like this is what it's going to be at. Terminator 2, I've been watching today. That one does sound quieter to me than what I've remembered it at. It's been a little while since I've watched that movie in its entirety. I've watched multiple scenes over probably monthly, but in its entirety. But here's another interesting thing is that at -5 on Terminator 2, I'm like sucked in more and hearing sounds that I hadn't heard before. And that could also be that it's been a while. Like I said, it's been a while since I've seen some of these scenes because they're the quieter scenes or something. They're not demo scenes. So maybe I haven't seen them since I got the new speakers and I've redone a few things in the room. So that could be it too. But my point is, one, I've never thought you missed anything by going to -5. I just always thought it was like, well, I'm at 0. That's what we're supposed to be at. It's where you start to miss stuff is when you go below that. If you go to a -10, say reference is 0 or whatever reference is, you go down -10 dB, you're losing, say a scene in particular. This was my contention. Say it's a really quiet scene and in the right rear corner of the room, you're supposed to hear mosquitoes at a 55, you know, a -55 dB level. But now you've just gone below 10 below reference level. You're down to -45. Maybe you don't even hear that at the seating position, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't want to lose that. But now at -5, and what we know or you're saying is -6 is the correct. People that are what they thought they were listening at a -10, they're only 4 below. So they're not missing anything, right? I think this is, it's good news. It's not bad news because here's where I'm going to flip the script a second. It's not bad news. If you listen 5 dB over, you're not missing anything. You're just getting everything that you're supposed to get in the first place. Just everything's louder, right?
Yeah.
And if you're hard of hearing, I'm not saying I am, but you might have to do that anyway. But I think this information, how you came about it, how that's going to be, I mean, people are going to be interested in that. But I think this is great information. I don't know, you know, I know you were nervous and you've been nervous since you found this out. You were so upset.
I know.
But I think it's great information.
Yeah, it certainly clears up something that's been bugging me for years. Because I always assumed, absolutely ages, you know, because I always assumed that calibrated systems set it to 0 dB, set it to reference level, that should be the right level. And I'm listening to stuff going, there is no way it's supposed to be this loud. It just, that can't be right. And then you start thinking, well, maybe they've mastered the disc wrong. Maybe they, you know, maybe it's just too loud on the disc for some reason or... And yeah, that is going to be a factor as well. But as it turns out,
they do make mistakes.
The more I have to tell you, the more I got into this, I'm sorry to say this, everyone, but the more you get into it, the more complicated it gets. It doesn't get simpler. It just gets more and more complex. Turns out if you're listening to things with your system set at 0 dB reference level, you're actually listening to it 6 dB too loud, which sounds crazy, but it just turns out that the level we're calibrating stuff to is not reference level. And just to put some context on it, because, I mean, we throw these numbers around, 6 dB, 10 dB, 12 dB, you know, they sound like small numbers, but 10 dB is considered... if you're talking about sound pressure level, then an increase of 10 decibels is considered twice as loud. So if you can imagine an explosion on screen that happens at 95 dB, and it's pretty loud at 95 dB, certainly in your home cinema, if it measures 95 dBc on your SPL meter, if you had your volume up another 10 dB, it would be twice as loud as you heard it. And you know, that explosion was pretty loud the first time. You know, you really don't want to hear it 10 dB louder. That's, no one needs to hear it at 105 dB.
Right.
So these small numbers, these 6 dB, 3 dB, 10 dB, quite significant changes. You know, 3 dB is a noticeable change. 6 dB is a really noticeable change. And if you take something down 10 dB, it's half the volume that it was before. So these are quite big moves. So coming down 6 dB from reference level is significant. And it's enough. It's enough.
It's noticeable,
It's enough to fix a lot of the problems people experience with trying to listen at reference level. Stick that in your pipes and smoke it. Sorry, everyone.
No, I think the only people that would be upset are the people that like it. Well, it would be like, no, zero has to be. And you would think that would be me because I've been listening at zero. And it's like, you can't tell me I've been wrong. I'm like, no, it's like, yeah, I can. I've been wrong. But again, if you go too loud, it's like Danny Speaker said when he was here, he's like, there's no such thing as too loud. And it's like, you can always go above. But for correct, then you're going to hear this is how we're going to tell you how you came to this, how you came with the minus six, how like what is coming into play for that. And it's like, and I think you feel bad about it, but I think more and more people are probably relieved right now and are going to be able to actually be like, okay, I can listen at what they consider what would be minus 10 and you're fine. And no, you're getting the experience that you're supposed to get.
Yeah. So it's probably worth explaining how movies are mixed. And the way it works. So as I say, it's very different to music. So what they do is they do exactly what we... movies are mixed in what's called a dubbing theater. And a dubbing theater is basically a cinema. It's a big room with a big projection screen and full-on cinema sound system. So it's designed to replicate a mid-sized cinema so that when you're mixing the movie, you are hearing it the way the audience will hear it in the cinema. And that makes sense. It's no point mixing it any other way, is there? Because, you know, the environment you're working in needs to match the environment it will be experienced in. So what they do is they calibrate the system, and they calibrate the system to reference level. So unlike us, where we have we calibrate our system and then we set the volume control to 0 dB, the cinemas and dubbing theaters normally have a Dolby processor or whatever, but the volume control is actually marked in very arbitrary numbers, and you between 0 and 10. And 10 is full up, 0 is all the way off, and 7 is where reference level is. So you set the volume control to 7, and then having set it to 7, you play this minus 20 dB test tone pink noise like we have coming out of our receivers, and you play it through each speaker, and you measure the sound pressure level at the listening position just like we do. And you measure it so that it reads 85 dBc on an SPL meter. And then you do that for each speaker, certainly for the front left, front center, front right. And you also do it for the surrounds. You might do it a little bit differently for the surrounds, but let's not worry about that. And so when you play this minus 20 dB signal, pink noise, through each speaker, you get 85 dB. And then you don't touch the volume control again. And it just stays there at 7, and you never move it. Because if you move it, it'll throw your point of reference off as a mixer. You won't know, in music studios, we do it all the time. We turn the monitors down, we turn them up, we listen to it loud, we listen to it quiet, we put it on big speakers, we put it on small speakers, because we want to hear how it will sound at every different level. And we're just getting a feel for how it works. But you can't do that with movies because they're designed to be played at one volume, and that is 7 on the Dolby system processor, surround processor. So someone who mixes movies gets used to the idea that This is the volume level. This is how loud the dialogue should be. And dialogue is obviously critical to 95% of movies. It's what's called the anchor element. It's the thing that, you know, it's got to be audible. Mm. You know, you've got to be able to make out what people are saying. So it can't be too quiet, but it doesn't need to be super loud. In fact, you know, an hour and a half of people talking at 90 dB would drive you insane. So it has to be at a sort of conversational, comfortable conversational level, so that everyone in the cinema can hear it. And that level tends to, if you were to measure dialogue, and it's difficult because obviously dialogue goes up and down. People start whispering, people start shouting. So it's up and down, but it's about 70 dB C, it would measure. So it's below that 85, but it's... And so as a mixer, you get used to, you basically, you're mixing with your ears. Over a period of time, you learn how loud dialogue should be. And you get used to just putting the faders at that level and the dialogue is comfortable. And you know, just from listening to it, it's not too loud, it's not too quiet, it's about right. And then after that, you can do anything you like.
Right.
So you can
make it's kind of like your dialogue is your baseline.
Yeah.
We get that. And now the explosions are going to be X amount over that. Our quieter scenes are going to be X amount under that. And that's how you get your dynamics. But like you said, it's like your baseline is here in the middle. This is the dialogue. And it's probably not exactly in the middle, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you have within the system, like electrically, you have 20 decibels of dynamic range from reference level. So from 85 dB, you can go up to 105 dBc before you have run out of headroom. But if you think that the dialogue is down at 70, so you can go 30, 35 dB louder than your dialogue before you've run out of room to maneuver. So there's a lot of dynamic range there to play with. There's tons. So people mixing movies quite often don't really have to look at the meters and see whether they're going over too much because they've got so much dynamic range to play with. They don't have to worry about it. And obviously, if there's a lot of action on screen, then the dialogue may get a bit louder to be able to get it over the top of the action. But then if there's a lot of action on screen, the characters, the actors will be talking louder anyway, or they might be shouting or whatever. So you just mix the way you think it should sound. You just mix it, you know. Having established your dialogue at a comfortable level, which turns out to be about 70 dB, you just get on and mix it. And the loud bits are loud and the quiet bits are quiet, and it's all good. And then when you take it into the movie theater, you take the print into the movie theater, they set their volume control to 7, and it should play back at the same volume level as it was heard in the dubbing theater. And that's great. But of course, what's going on these days is that now that we're making versions of these movies for home use, we are sort of having to do a new mix. Because there's another thing you have to contend with in movie theater, and that's to do that dates back to this 1930s, 40s, 50s thing where they decided to come up with a sort of EQ curve for cinema sound, and that's called the X curve. And it's quite a controversial thing now, but basically it rolls off all the high end. And they, oh boy, the history of the X curve is messy. And there's not actually, when people look at it now, there's actually not actually much justification for doing it. Again, just talking about the X curve could be a podcast all in itself. But the end result is that the thing is, a dubbing theater will also have that X curve because you are trying to, you need to listen to it the way it will be heard in the cinema. So when they're mixing a movie, there can be a tendency to make it too bright, to brighten it up, to try and make it sound brighter, because the system in the dubbing theater and in the cinema is rolling off a lot of the high end. And so if you go back to the days of home THX, There used to be a feature called Cinema EQ.
Yeah.
I think.
Back in the 90s.
Yeah.
When THX first came out. Yeah. That was the big deal.
Yeah. And I think that was partly because in those days, if you bought a Laserdisc, the soundtrack that was on the Laserdisc was pretty much the theatrical release soundtrack.
Right.
You know, untouched. It would just, they just put it on the Laserdisc, maybe in two channel Dolby Surround or maybe in 5.1 later on. But it still had all that like high end emphasis on it that it would have had for the theater. And so to play it back on a home system, you had to roll a bit of the top off to make it sound right. We don't really do that anymore. You do still have, you know, cinema. Oh, it was Cinema Re-EQ, wasn't it? When it was THX, wasn't it Re-EQ?
Yeah, I think that, yeah. R-E-E-Q. It was like capital R-E, capital E-Q. Right.
Yeah, that's right. And that was basically to compensate for what re-recording mixers were doing to compensate for the X-curve and make it sound right. And then suddenly you've got to...
Yeah, and then the other part of, especially with THX, this really comes into reference level. At early on, and even now, people still have... I think this is kind of where we get the idea of, you know, like, I want all my speakers to match. I want, you know, everything. Like, ideally, you want to have... I mean, people still try to pull it off where every speaker in their entire system is the exact same speaker, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we joke about it. Everybody that comes on here, if you've come from the 80s or earlier, we had Frankenstein systems with all different speakers and stuff. And then obviously THX comes out in the 90s. We get this, you know, re-EQ. And the idea was we were all starting to refine things and we were trying to find a baseline to utilize that reference level. And then THX comes out with their entire program where if you had a THX certified disc, you had a THX certified, you know, power source, meaning your receiver, your processor, your amplifiers, and then THX certified speakers, what you're doing is you're taking the guesswork out, right? Yeah. Everything, if you have everything THX certified, you know you're getting the proper signal. You know you're getting, you do these settings. And that basically was, it was a sales gimmick, yes, but at the same time, we all loved the idea because it answered a lot of the questions that we were having at home. Like, is this right? Is this right? Yeah. It's like, so that stamp of approval on the disc and on all those other things, It gave us peace of mind when we set our volume levels, right?
Yeah, it was another example of sort of an attempt at standardization, but standardization for home replay of movies. And I can remember, I never had a THX system at home, but I remember going into a lot of like demo rooms at home cinema dealers, and they'd have a CRT projector and a THX system. And I remember going in there and thinking, this does actually sound like the cinema. Whatever the THX spec is doing, it seems to be doing something right because this does feel like being in the cinema rather than being in my front room with a little Denon Dolby surround system. Not that I didn't like my little old Denon, whatever it is, 3020, AVC 3020, you know, basic, you know, simple Dolby surround thing, but the THX system really did sound like cinema.
Yeah.
And that, and as you say, that's because everything was THX spec and it was designed to work together. But we've moved away from that now. And part of the reason is that what we get on Blu-ray and UHD, you know, 4K Blu-ray is no longer the theatrical mix. It goes through another stage of mastering and remixing, not an in-depth remix, but basically it's sort of remastered for, it's what they call a home entertainment mix. So you have the theatrical mix, you have the home entertainment mix. And of course there's a lot of controversy, you know, a lot of people accuse Disney and, dare I say, Marvel of doing slightly neutered mixes on their discs and sort of compressed. And I don't know how true that is. It's but it a lot of people will say it sounds like, it just doesn't sound like the way it sounded in the cinema. It sounded more dynamic. It sounded bigger. And that's because they're doing another mix, a home entertainment mix. And that mix is done obviously in a smaller room because you're doing a mix for the home. So you want to do that mix in a small dubbing room with small speakers. And this is what they discovered 10, 15 years ago, is that the reference level that they established for a dubbing theatre and for the cinema does not hold in a small room. So What they tried to do basically is they tried to, you know, you take the small room that you're going to do the home entertainment mix in, and then you calibrate it to 85 dB exactly the way you do with the big dubbing theater. And then, but I kind of discovered that they figured out there's this thing called a perceptual loudness. And what this says is that, sorry if this is getting so technical. It's
no, I love
if you're if people are switching off, I totally understand, but just bear with me because we're gonna get there. They discovered that if you play an audio signal at, okay, let's say 85 dB in a big room, and then you go into a small room, play the same signal over some speakers at 85 dB in the small room, it sounds louder in the small room.
So you and I talked about this a little while ago. Came up with an analogy, and I'll get to that in a second. But I want to try and clarify that a little bit. Meaning, like, this is all based off of reference. Okay. So in actuality, you go into a big room to get to 85 dB, to get the sound that you're going to play at 85 dB, you need, you know, more power, larger speakers, whatever you want to call it, but it's going to measure at 85 dB.
Yeah.
You go into a smaller room, you're still get, it's still 85 dB, but now you need less power. You need everything compresses down. What you and I are talking about here isn't that it is actually louder. Of course, 85 dB, it's going to take a lot more power, but in a large room, but it's still just 85 dB. Okay. It's hard for people to wrap their mind around that idea.
Yeah, because you would think that
it's gonna be
one thing. 85 dB in a big room must sound the same volume as 85 dB in a small, because it measures the same on the meter,
right? On the meter in the listening position. Now, in the big room, when you go over and put your meter next to the speaker, it's going to come out way louder than it's going to come out in the small room next to the speaker, because it has to get it to be 85 at the listening position. So
it's just
a quick analogy. But now here's my analogy, is that what we're talking about, the perception of 85 in a smaller room, even though it's measuring it exactly 85, right? It's the perception is feels louder. And the reason is, and here's my analogy, it's just like if you tell somebody, look, you'll get the same field of view if you sit 6 feet away from a 70-inch OLED as you do from sitting 10 feet away on 110. Your brain still knows that you can practically reach out and touch the screen. It just doesn't feel as big. You need that distance between you and the view, the screen, to get that proper feel, just like you need that distance in a room to get that feel of a larger sound. Or now it's like, why is it shouting at me? It's so it's just the speaker's right there. Why is it so loud?
Yeah,
right. Is that a good analogy?
I like that, actually.
I was saving that for you.
That's really good. That's the first time I've heard that. That's spot on. Because you do get that, don't you? You always hear people going, "Oh, if you can't afford a projection system, just get a 65-inch OLED and sit like 6 feet away from it. And we all know it does not work. It just is not the same experience at all.
If that's what you have to do, that's the compromise, because we're all about compromises. But if you don't have to do that, don't go into a small room and sit 6 feet away from your 65-inch television.
No, it's not going to work.
You're going to be disappointed in yourself because you're going to have all that space.
It is because your brain knows
right
how big that screen is. And and it is just somehow a different experience. This wasn't just a theoretical thing that some crazy scientist came up with. That they did a load of listening experiments with like a big stack of people, and tried to, you know, they literally had like 20, 30 people, and they got people to write down how loud they thought something was, and was this twice as loud as that, and blah, blah, blah. And they've proven that, you know, in a small room, something that measures the same SPL seems louder. You would generally swear that it is louder in the small room than it is in the big room. And no one really knows why. It's getting into the world of psychoacoustics now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
perception is reality. And if, you know, it's like you go in there and be like, wow, why was that shouting at me so loud? And it's like, it's literally the same sound you heard in the big room.
Yeah. Like, they don't know why. They think, is it because your brain knows you're closer to the loud thing and therefore you want to get away? Instinctively, you want to get away from the loud thing in case it's dangerous. And so it, you know,
No. There's a whole other podcast, Paul. Yeah. And I love that idea too, because you're like, it literally could be a survival instinct.
Yeah.
It's not,
so we don't know why, but your brain will swear it is louder. Therefore, when they build little dubbing suites for home entertainment mixes, so it could be for television or streaming or for Blu-ray, they still calibrate the whole thing with that same 20 decibel pink noise that we use. But when they calibrate it, they calibrate it to a lower level. And generally, it's calibrated to 79 decibels. So six decibels quieter than the big dubbing theater. But it doesn't mean that they're mixing quieter. It just means that they will mix to the same perceived level as they do in the big dubbing room.
How did they come up with, minus six? Like, because doesn't that feel almost like arbitrary? I know it's not, but you know what I mean? Like, you went to like 79, they didn't go to 80, they didn't go to 75. They, you know what I mean? They didn't round off. They literally went six. Like,
yeah, they literally, as I understand it, they literally got a bunch of people, experienced mixers, and they just said, at what point does that 20 dB pink noise sound the same level to you as it does in the big theater? And then they measured what SPL that was, and they went, right, that's what we're calibrating to. Because it works both ways as well. So it means that when they're doing a mix in the small room, because there's another thing that goes, not only do you mix in a small room to create the home entertainment mix, but there's a lot of pre-mixing that goes on before you go to a big dubbing theater when you're doing a major movie, because it's so intricate and there's a lot of drudgery, a lot of editing you have to do. And there's no point taking up great big dubbing theaters to do all the sort of hard work. You can spend days and days and days in a small room, you know, even at home. During COVID, a lot of people mixing movies were working from home, and they built a little Atmos room in their house and mixed movies from home. And it meant that if they set this reference level down at 79 dB, the mix work that they were doing in their small room would translate to the big room. So when they took their mix to the big room, it would still sound right.
Oh, wow.
Even though the big room is calibrated to 85.
Yeah.
But it would, perceptually, it would be the same level. You know, one of the big worries you always have, and I have when I mixed my thing for cinema, was, you know, I spent 2 weeks working on the mix at home on a big surround system, but in a small room, actually in the room I'm sitting in right now. And, But then I knew I had to take it to a big dubbing theater to kind of do the final mix. But they didn't have to do very much to it. It was pretty much on the money. And they just tweaked it and pushed it a little bit and got it to sound the way they felt it should sound on the big cinema system. So it's kind of a cross compatibility thing, you know, between small rooms and big rooms. You have to calibrate them differently so that mixes that you do in one room work in the other room and vice versa.
Right.
So that means that the reference level in a small room is 79 dB. And therefore, if we want our home cinemas to be at that same reference level, we need to calibrate them to 79 dB, not 85.
Okay. This is where you and I went back and forth a bunch. All right. I want to clarify this. Mm-hmm. Tell me if I'm wrong. We've gone back and forth, but this is now we're like literally face to face. Let's do this. You're still running all your calibrations are based off of reference level, whether you're running. Welcome to Boston. Whether you're running, you know, Dirac, REW, Room EQ Wizard, or any of these things, they're all based off of reference level being zero. So my thing is everything's calibrated exactly how you would do it before. Just when you go to watch something, you go to -6. Because if we start messing with the calibration part, isn't that where we're going to run into like serious trouble? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do I get Odyssey to redo everything? Why don't I just do it this, you know, let Odyssey do its thing, let Dirac do its thing, and then go to -6.
Totally. Yep. Yeah, do that. Right. Because, Odyssey will calibrate to 85. The best thing to do,
right.
The best thing to do, because when I say 85, of course, to make things more, just people are just going to start throwing stuff across the room now, aren't they? When I say 85, if you're using your receiver's test tones, you calibrate those to 75.
Right.
But most people know why that is. It's because, you know,
you don't want to be running your test tones at 85.
The
85. System knows that 80. It's setting it up for 85 dB.
Yeah. The right. Test tones in the receiver are actually at -30 dB.
Okay.
Whereas in the dubbing room, in the dubbing theater, they're at -20. So they're louder.
Right.
So they're 10 dB quieter. So we calibrate 75. Whereas in the dubbing room, they're -20 dB. We calibrate to 85. But it's the same. It's the same level. It works out the same.
Exactly. It works out the same because, yes, we do have a reference. We have a reference level. We have an idea, a destination that we want to get to, the sound, right? And then, but we, whether you're in the studio, the dubbing, whatever, we have it's like people get confused by all the different numbers. Like, but if they're mastering, if they're, you know, setting their speak ups, their noise is at -20 and I'm doing -30. Shouldn't I change this? No, none of that needs to change because we do have the reference level. But what we're finding out, what you've found out is that we actually need to be setting our volumes at -6 to get the same sound in all the different places.
Yeah.
And we've been through.
One of the issues is that when people talk about reference level, they think of a volume level, I'm listening at reference level, as if it's a sound level, as if it's a volume in the room is reference level. And really, we ought to talk about a reference volume setting. Because the level in the room is determined by the material. It's not really, you know, what we're trying to do is just set the gain of our systems. Oh, God, no.
We're
trying to set all our systems so that everything we listen to sounds the same volume in every single room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what reference level is that everything would sound the same. Would be the same volume.
Yep.
And the problem is small rooms, everything sounds louder. for the given
perceptually.
Yeah. So reference level, technically, you know, if you use Audacy, it'll go and calibrate to 85. And they have established in the last decade or so that that is wrong. And that is not the reference level that small dubbing rooms are using. That's not, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not no. reference level. It's unfortunately, there's no way of getting Audacy to calibrate to anything else. And Audacy does an amazingly good job of getting it bang on that 85 or 75. I'm surprised how good it is, even with the little cheap microphone that you know comes included with the receiver, gets it pretty much smack on. I'm really impressed. The only problem is it's smack on 6 dB too loud. So all you have to do, if you've used Audacy and you want to run your system at reference level, set your volume control to -6.
Right. So can we talk a bit about how you got it? Like, who did you talk? You've talked to a lot of people. You've done a lot of research for this. You're using your knowledge and your history to so that you can understand it better than I, and your ability to talk to these people. Who did you talk to? How did you come about? Like, cause you kept texting me going, oh no, I just found this out. It's like, you know, let's talk a bit about that.
It first came up because I was listening to an interview with, sorry, I'm going to look up his name because I've forgotten his name. Was it Brian? Oh, let me try and find it. One of the guys, the guy that's the head of, yeah, it is Brian Long, who is the supervising engineer at Skywalker Sound.
Okay.
And he was talking about all this with the guys from Meyer Sound, who do a lot of cinema sound systems as well as sort of big live sound systems. And they were talking about it, and he was talking about the small dubbing rooms they have at Skywalker. And he said, we calibrate all our small rooms to 80 dB. I've spoken to a few other people I know over here in the UK who sit in small dubbing rooms all the time, mostly for TV, and they're doing the same thing, and they're calibrating their systems to 79, and it is now part of A85? Is it the ATSC specification A85 that talks about monitoring levels for small rooms. Yeah, ATMs. Sorry, I've got pages and pages of notes here. oh boy. Yeah. And so, yeah.
While you look at that, I'll say, like, when you and I first talked about this, you had about 2 days of information and I was like, let's jump on and do it now. And you're like, no, I want to dig further.
Oh boy. Yeah. If we'd had this conversation like 2 weeks ago, I would have been going, I think this, and I've heard that, but I'm not sure, I'd need to check. And I've spent the last 2 weeks checking, and it's all out there if you dig around for it and you ask the right people. But basically television and home entertainment mixes are all done in small rooms, calibrated -79 dB. Unfortunately, it's also at the discretion of the facility.
Yep.
So having established a standard, they're now allowed to change it if they want.
Right. Just like we have that right at home.
Yeah, we do. Well, that is also true. It's like, if you want to listen to it quieter or you want to listen to it louder, the police are not going to come knocking. They're not going to come around and, you know, break your door down and arrest you for listening to something too loud or too quiet. It's fine. You can still do whatever you like. But you will run into this. You will run into this problem of constantly, you know, if you're listening to it too loud, you'll be constantly turning the volume up and down unless you think your ears really can withstand 109 dBC of sound for 2 hours, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know. I mean, some people like to go right down the front at a heavy rock gig and stick their head in the speakers. Well, you know, if you want to do that and go deaf by the time you're 50, then fine. But, you know, I've been there and done that. I don't do that anymore. You know, but yeah, but they actually set out a bunch of specs for how to calibrate your system based on the volume of the room. So it is carefully codified. But I did all the maths and I worked out that basically all of our home cinemas sit in the bottom category. So that's
that doesn't sound good. You mean the smaller one? Let's call it that.
because 85 dB. If you're calibrating to 85 dB for like a cinema, and you're working in a dubbing theater that's that kind of size, that's any room over 20,000 cubic feet. So over 20,000. So even if you were on the bottom end of that,
so 20, that's 000, the largest.
That's the largest. You can go bigger. You can go bigger if you want.
Do they have a calibration for that? Do they have a number? Or is that
bigger? I mean, I don't think anyone builds dubbing rooms.
Okay.
Not much bigger than 20,000 cubic feet. But I mean, that would be a big cinema, let alone, you know, a dubbing room. Hang on, I was just going to do the maths here live on the podcast. So let's assume you've got a 15 foot ceiling.
Yep.
15 foot. So divide by 15 foot and then take the square root of that. This is what I've been doing. Oh, God. Hang on.
This is what you've been doing for 2 weeks.
Yep. 20,000 cubic foot room with a 15 foot ceiling gives you a floor area of 1,300 odd square feet. We take the square root. So that would be a room like
40 foot
long by 32 wide with a 15 foot ceiling.
Yeah.
If your home cinema is that big, then calibrate to 85. But most of our rooms, I worked out, if you have a room that's 30 foot long, 20 foot wide, with an 8.5 foot ceiling, you still calibrate to 70. Actually, ATSC say 78 for that size of room, 78. But all the dubbing rooms I know of are calibrating to 79. They've pretty much established that as a standard. But there you go. You know, if your home theater is over 30 foot by 20 foot, then maybe you can go a bit louder. But maybe you guys have home theaters that are bigger than that.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, we don't over here. We have titchy little houses here. So
no, it's, that I think pretty much everybody listening has got a smaller room than that.
Exactly.
Or at that room. I mean, I've seen some that are that big, but but that's interesting. So like that's actually pretty cool because maybe that's why like they don't change anything. Why don't we have this knowledge? Like why did you have to work so hard to get this?
I don't know. It's because
not something established people don't want to know.
No, we've just established this 85 thing within the home cinema industry for like 20, 30 years, you know, probably going back to THX. And it's just been like passed down through the generations, hasn't it? You calibrate to 85 or 75 with a 30 dB. Yeah, you know what I mean. And it's just become the accepted, you know, rule. But of course, have people been talking to the pros in sound movie sound facilities and dubbing rooms? It turns out they're calibrating different.
Even if you talk to somebody, right?
Yeah.
So say I got to talk to some people. Say I got some actual sound people in on my podcast, like from like a studio, and they've done multiple movies. I wouldn't even know to ask them this. It took the combination of hearing that podcast, your knowledge, us talking, you going, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. Let me do some investigation to put all the pieces together to be able to realize that we have to work backwards, because I'd have people on and like, why would I say like, so what are you mixing at? What size is your room? What's the, you know, what cubic size is your room? And it's like, I don't even know if people would know to ask this, to find out that it was like your investigation is actually what led you to it. So but it does seem like after it's broken down, it's a pretty simple thing to explain, be like, you know, when, and it's all based off of that perception of sound idea.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know why this had, why you had to work so hard to get there. It should be out there.
Yeah, it should. I'm not the first person to figure this out, as it turns out.
No, I didn't think you found like.
Yeah, but I've never heard anyone talk about it in a home cinema context. But if you go on, there are various forums on the internet, like at Avid. The main bit of software that's used for film mixing and sound production for film is Pro Tools, which coincidentally is also used for music a lot as well. But that's pretty much the standard for mixing in film. And Avid, who make Pro Tools, have a really big forum. And obviously, there's a whole section of that that's on movie post-production. And what level they calibrate their systems to is like the longest running thread there is on the post-production forums. It's like, how do I calibrate my system? And also, what do I do about X-curve? And should I be compensated? Should I be listening with an X-curve? And so guys that work in movie sound post-production are constantly thinking about this stuff and trying to make sure they're getting it right. But somehow those conversations just have never really sort of filtered across into home cinema. Possibly because, you know, what does it matter? You know, those guys at home, they just turn the volume up and down however they like. So, but they can't. People working in post-production can't. They leave the volume at 7. And they have to, because otherwise you just don't know where you are. So to them, it's really critical. It's important stuff. Us, if it's too loud, we turn it down. If it's too quiet, we turn it up. But the problem being that we can get into a situation where we're constantly turning it down and up right, all the way through a movie. Or, you know, so I think that's why I think we've been talking to people who work in home cinema and the home cinema industry, and we're not so much talking to people that work in the, you know, professional sort of movie sound post-production right, industry. But turns out, you know, there are, you know, if we have a concept of reference level, they have a concept of reference level. It's the same thing. And we should right, be doing the same thing as they're doing, which is, to all intents and purposes, calibrate to -79, calibrate to 79 dB, not 85 dB.
Right.
But as you say, if you're using Audacy or Dirac or whatever, and it's auto-calibrated everything, if you want to be at reference, set to -6. There right, there's another massive fly in the ointment, unfortunately. And I don't know, are you ready to get into this?
Yeah.
Have you? Right. Okay, so let's move on a second. So the other day, I made it out to see Across the Spider-Verse. Mm. Finally, it's the first chance I had. And I normally would go to Dolby Cinema or an IMAX or something like that. But I just decided to go to a relatively common or garden cinema. And I took my SPL level meter with me to measure the sound level in an ordinary cinema. And again, I've discovered I'm not the only person in post-production sound who does this. There's another guy. Who was talking about this? He drives his wife nuts because whenever they go to the cinema, he takes an SPL meter with him because he's constantly checking to see like, how loud are they mixing the dialogue? How loud are the, you know, the big moments and how, you know, and she's like, put that thing away, will you? But, so I measured Spider-Verse, and in that little cinema, I was getting, sorry, I need to take my glasses off to read this. Numbers are so small. I was getting dialogue between 68 and 75 dBC. And so the middle range of that is about 72. And the loud bits were like high 80s, you know, maybe sneaking into the 90s. And I remember sitting there and watching it and thinking, actually, this is a little bit too quiet.
A lot of people have said that about the movie, though, too.
Oh, what, about Spider-Verse? Oh, yes. I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that. Yeah, it sounded, I was like, God, I can't wait to hear, I can't wait to watch this at home, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
It was a little bit too quiet, but, you know, again, talking to a few post-production and re-recording mixers, dialogue that sits at around 70 dB or just over, it's kind of where they're operating. So Spider-Verse was fairly quiet in the cinema. But then I came and measured my system across a whole bunch of movies.
Yeah.
And I measured some Blu-ray, I measured some UHD, I measured some streaming, I measured Disney, I measured Apple, Amazon, and I got it, and I measured it all at reference. So
minus some six, of it, but at
no, you, at the old reference 85 dB, 0 dB on my receiver.
Right.
And I put earplugs in for some of it. And it is all over the shop. I hate to say it. So having said that, oh, we need to listen to everything at minus six because that's how it's been mixed. They're mixing a lot of stuff wrong.
But this
was triggered by Nelson, actually, because I don't know whether you saw this tweet.
Yeah,
it was thing. But Nelson was trying to watch the Blu-ray release of the day after. No, not the day after tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
And he was going, I can't even listen to this at minus 10. At minus 10, it's blowing me across the room. What the heck is going on here? So I checked out Edge of Tomorrow. And yeah, Edge of Tomorrow has been mixed crazy loud. On the Blu-ray, and apparently it's been corrected for the UHD release.
Correct, and a lot of people on the UHD release think that one's wrong.
Yeah, they think it's too
crazy loud.
Yeah, now this is really frustrating because you hear this all the time about Disney releases, don't you? And again about Marvel. Oh no, it's another quiet Marvel. They've got it too quiet. I had to turn my system up for the Marvel. That actually, it's the quiet ones that are about right, and everything else is being mixed too loud. And of course, there may
like
be a downside.
The music industry, though, but that's do you see what they're doing? Like what? And can we talk a little bit about this and the dynamics? Hmm. Because when you mix stuff really loud or to a louder extent, you're doing that music industry thing, and you're compressing the dynamics. You're not getting as great of a dynamic as you can get when you mix it a little bit softer, because you'll still have the actual peak volume is still going to be the same. It's just everything in the middle is going, you get bigger spikes. The actual top level is the same on both tracks, but you know what I mean?
Totally. So yeah, you've still got this like anchor element, which is the dialogue. And so, broadly speaking, whatever movie you stick in your Blu-ray player, the dialogue should be, and I'm talking about dialogue when there's no other action on the screen, it's just two characters just talking to each other in a room, no other sound. That dialogue ought to be about the same between movies, because it will be in the dubbing theater. So it should measure around, you know, in the low 70s, something like that, 71, 72, 70. If you mix your dialogue a lot louder than that, then it will leave less headroom for the big moments. So as you say, you know, it may be that the louder mix that everyone goes, oh, you know, great, lovely, loud mix on this disc, may actually be less dynamic than the ones that you think are quieter. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just like music, you know, if a CD seems to be a bit quiet, just turn the volume up and then it's louder. And then, you do have control over the volume. So, the music industry is another whole topic. The only thing is that with movies, even if you do mix the dialogue a bit too loud, we still have a ton of headroom, quite a lot.
Mm.
You know, you're still not going to run out of space on the disc unless you're mixing it stupid loud. But you'd hope that there was like a QC stage at some point with all these disc releases where someone would check it and go, "Ooh, is it supposed to be this loud? You know, it's crazy." You know, I mean, the number of releases we've had in the last year or two where there are like major flaws on the disc, you do start to wonder whether QC is really something the studios are attending to. You know, you get things where you start to ask yourself whether anyone actually watched this before they like put it out, went to replication and put it out in the market. But, so some of the variation I got. Oh, okay. So here's a good one. And this is one I was telling you earlier, it would come back to this.
Yeah.
So I measured Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I measured the 4K release the 4K disc release that came out. I then measured the Disney Plus release in 4K.
Mm-hmm.
And I also measured the old Blu-ray from, you remember the Blu-ray box set?
Mm-hmm. The one right before the 4K, where it had the box. It was like the yellower box set.
Yeah, with everything. The one with young Anakin
special edition.
The front so I measured all those. Right, so it's the same film. You would imagine that it's all the same level, wouldn't you?
Oh no!
No, I never really imagined isn't. That. It really isn't. And interestingly, the quietest one turned out to be the Disney Plus release, not by much, only by a couple of dB. And then the 4K Blu-ray, and that was cool, that was fine. And then I got to the old Blu-ray release, and that was crazy loud. It was insanely loud. It might not sound like, I mean, when I say the action scenes were 5 dB louder, that doesn't sound like a lot louder, but believe me, if something blows up next to your head at 96 dB, and then something else blows up next to your head at 101 dB, you're going to know about it. It was obvious the minute you put the disc in, it was like, as soon as the dialogue showed up, you're like, whoa, I need to turn this down. What's going on here? And that was one of the loudest. Yeah, the dialogue averaged 84 dB C.
Wow.
Just plain dialogue. So that was kind of 14 dB louder than it should be. So that was like twice the volume of ordinary dialogue on a properly mastered disc.
And that's the Blu-ray. That's the Blu-ray.
That's the edition, old Blu-ray. Edition. The old, I mean, there's a lot wrong with those discs, particularly when you see them in context with the 4K, current 4K releases.
Yeah.
My God, the color's wrong and it's all over the place, but. I'm only keeping it for the special features. That's the only reason
the
I
fact
still
that
own
I bought it.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks good on display.
As I say, I was going back through things because, I'll talk about this in a second. But so Marvel comes up all the time, doesn't it? So I checked. I ended up checking Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
And Endgame. So I checked the Disney Plus IMAX version, the Disney Plus ordinary scope version and the 4K Blu-ray. They were dialogue wise, they were all identical, exactly the same, like exactly the same mix.
Can I hazard a guess?
Oh yeah, go on. I'll tell you if you're right.
At the
level or what I'm about to say next?
No, go ahead. You say yours next. Go ahead.
You sure?
Yeah.
Oh, go on. I'm curious to know what you're
my thinking. Guess is it's because it's such a big movie, the compression that's going on to fit it in all those places, you're going to come up with a more uniform. It's like trying to fit 18 eggs in a 12 egg container. And so they had to manipulate it a certain way, and it's pretty much flatlined. So that's why you're going to get a more consistent dial. That's my guess, because that's a 3-hour movie that they have to do. And that's on a 66 gigabyte disc. It's going to go streaming. It's going to go. I mean, everything is You know what I mean? It's good. There's going to be a lot of other kind of compression as well.
It's a relatively modern movie. So, and yeah. all three of these versions appeared at the same time. So basically, they're all the same mix. So they should come back at the same level. And what's quite interesting is that you know, my Apple TV plugged into my system played back at exactly the same volume level as my Blu-ray player. So there was actually some amazing consistency there. You know, I wasn't even expecting that, and it was right on the money. But then, you know, when you look at all the standards that are involved that go into, you know, broadcast television and streaming and everything, you know, maybe it's not such a giant surprise. Plus, of course, it's digital connections. It's all HDMI. So, you know, the scope for kind of getting the levels wrong or the levels kind of weirdly suddenly changing by 4 or 5 dB, you know, kind of isn't there that was there with analog. But there were two interesting things about Endgame. So the dialogue was exactly the same level on all three releases. So the two streaming releases and the 4K Blu-ray. But the action scenes were 5 dB louder on the 4K Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's your dynamics.
Yeah. So there was actually 5 dB more. So the dynamic range between dialogue and a big action scene on the Blu-ray was 24 dB. On Disney Plus, it was 18 or 19 dB. So they for Disney Plus, they have pulled back the big action scenes slightly.
Right. And that's your compression. That's your digital compression. You don't?
I'm not convinced it is, no. Really? I think that's literally just a... okay, so we've established there's a system for doing movie sound.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know, calibrate to 85, mix the dialogue to a comfortable level, and then do whatever you like. So you can make it all incredibly loud, you can make it all really quiet. You know, it's up to the mixer. Broadcast television has stricter standards about volume levels. And it's done for a fairly sensible reason, because with broadcast TV, you tend to go from one program to another program to another program. They can't all be different levels. You know,
right.
You know, they establish pretty early on that viewers get really upset if things, they get upset if they get louder. It's quite interesting. But basically, all has to be in the same ballpark. Otherwise, people get frustrated because they're constantly turning the volume control up and down.
Right.
So streaming tends to adopt the same standards that have been established for broadcast TV recently. Okay. And the way most of that works is that you have to, over the length of the whole program, it has to measure. Oh, I'm sorry if this is getting really technical.
No, this is a great explanation. I like this.
We have another way of measuring sound level in television and broadcast that was established probably 10 years ago or so. And that's the idea of a loudness unit. I mean, it's sort of just a measure of how loud something seems to be. And it's not a measure of decibels in a room. It's a measure of loudness in the audio signal. And it scales from 0 dB is like as loud as it'll go, and you can't go louder, down to minus whatever. And they want the whole program to average kind of minus 24. So 24 dB down from as loud as it'll go. And this is like the base level. And you have special software that actually measures your whole program and ignores the really quiet bits. Because, you know, I mean, if you measured A Quiet Place, it would be super quiet all the way through. And
not an average, because it would be like, well, A Quiet Place as average would be so low.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So what it does is it gates out, it ignores all the stuff that's super quiet. Any periods of silence or really quiet bits, it just ignores those and just goes, well, they're meant to be quiet, so we won't worry about those. So the average level of the rest of the program is minus 24, but then they also specify a peak level, i.e. it must never ever go louder than this. And that's -2, -2.7 dB.
Mm-hmm.
Complicated. Don't worry about it. It just means that any massive peaks, any massive peaks that you have to put a limiter in and make sure it doesn't go over for it to stay in broadcast spec. And then they also specify a loudness range, which means that, again, you use a special bit of software to measure the loudness range of your whole program. So it measures the quietest bits versus the loudest bits and says that the loudest bits can't be more than a certain number of dB louder than the quietest bits. And right. And they're quite strict about this. Broadcasters, particularly, if something's going out for like broadcast television, you have to hit their specs. Otherwise, they'll send it back. So post-production people are pretty hot on this, and they are using every tool they can to measure, to check that their program meets the broadcast specs. Because if it's going out for broadcast on Friday night and you don't get it to the broadcaster until Friday morning, which does happen, and I've been there and done that, if it gets there on Friday morning and then it goes through QC before they broadcast it, and then it turns out to be out of spec, they can't broadcast it. So you have to nail it. You have to nail it right down. And so I suspect that Endgame, when they went to put it on streaming on Disney Plus, the theatrical mix probably broke, you know, was pushing the boundaries of that loudness range, and that they couldn't let the big explode. I can't remember which moment it was. I checked. Trying to remember. No, can't remember. But those big moments were just like a little bit too big to fit into spec. So they just had to pull the gain back down a little bit in the big action scenes. You do notice it.
Yeah.
Because I felt the disc was a bit too loud at reference, and it was, because it was 6 dB too loud. and then when I watched the Disney stream, it was more manageable. I'm like, oh, it seems a little bit quieter. It was still loud, but it wasn't blowing my head off. So, but then there were crazy things. So I started to think, what's the oldest Blu-ray I have? You know, because is it like the music industry? Have things gradually got louder and louder and louder? I mean, we're talking about Edge of Tomorrow being miles too loud, you know, obviously miles too loud, and they've fixed that. And yeah, it's a fairly recent movie. And I just thought, are you right? Has there been a sort of a little bit of a loudness war with home disc releases? So I went back to Contact, which is pretty long time ago. When did we first get Blu-ray? It was about
2006, six, something like that.
Yeah. That's right. Contact. And Contact had the dialogue down at 73, which is kind of where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the big action scenes were 92 and 95. So quieter than Endgame, still felt super loud in my room.
Mm-hmm.
But this is at 85. This is calibrated to 85. So this technically is 6 dB too loud. So was a bit more under control. And then I thought, let's check the Criterion release of Tootsie. So, what was that? 70, when is Tootsie?
Everyone should have a copy of Tootsie.
That's a great movie. Come on. It's a fantastic movie. And you forget that Bill Murray's in it as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Bill Murray is Dustin Hoffman's roommate in Tootsie.
That's right.
He slipped past me.
That's kind of like Brad Pitt in True Romance.
Oh, I always think of Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
Brad. Was that his first appearance?
Thelma and Louise, I think, was one of his first big ones. But he was in the trailer. He was
That's
the,
right. Yeah,
he was the plot head in the trailer in True Romance.
Oh yeah.
Remember?
And of course, he was fairly well established by 12 Monkeys, wasn't he?
Yeah. Later on.
But anyway, yeah. So Tootsie. So you think Tootsie is pretty, you know, It's not a bigger, nothing blows up in Tootsie, does it? There's no major car crashes. There's no aliens or robots or sorcerers or anything. You know, it's just people talking and TV production. Yeah, so the dialogue on that was at 80 dB. And there are no action scenes, so I didn't measure any action scenes. Oh, and the I also measured the end credits music on all of these movies, and
That's the big time.
Yeah, and that was at 91 dB, so some kind of 70s Dave Grusin jazz at 91 dB. So Tootsie was crazy loud on the disc,
right?
And then I checked some DVDs, and I went back to the. Some of the oldest DVDs I have. And this was so much fun.
Oh,
I've got to tell you, I haven't touched my DVDs in like 25 years. I haven't. I packed them all in a box and stuck them away on top of the cupboard. And I haven't had them out. And it was a good feeling going through those.
Yeah.
It was like, I didn't realize I had so many snapper cases. So many of them. But it was great fun. So I pulled out, in terms of old ones, I pulled out Bull Durham, which just has a Dolby Digital, like stereo. So, and I pulled out LA Confidential.
Oh,
and, interestingly, those measured really nice. So they were quieter than all the Blu-rays and they sat very nicely at 85 dB at that, our old reference level.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of. So here's the problem. Having said that, yeah, reference level is 6 dB down from where you think it is. It's at minus 6. All bets are off, unfortunately, because all of these movies are different volumes.
Well, yeah, but that's, and we've known that, but it's like, but I think, like you said, like the minus 6 comes into play on pretty much anything coming out now, the last 10 years. But it's good to know this so that, like, if you are watching an older movie or an older Blu-ray and, say, like myself, you start getting used to listening to everything at I'm going to do minus 5. Maybe I'll go to minus 6 because I just love to be technically correct. It's only one more. But anyways, when you throw in an older Blu-ray or something and you're like, oh, okay, then you can turn it up if it seems too... like way too soft, right? And like I said at the beginning, I felt like the last 2 weeks my content has been more consistent through the different mediums that I'm using because of that. And sometimes, and that's not just me turning it up either, it's also that I think, you know, when you go down to the minus 6, it's, or the minus 5 that I was at, I'm not getting the big bombastic, like crazy extension in certain things. But then on the stuff that doesn't have that, or maybe when you're listening at 85, it just feels more like everything comes down. It's hard to explain, but I did. I enjoyed it. I didn't feel like I was missing anything. Where I felt like I was missing something before was because I thought that's what we were supposed to be at. Right. And that's what we've been taught. So if you have that, but once you find out, it's like, oh, this is where it's supposed to be because of that perception of sound, because of the work that they've done to try and give you. And here's what's really interesting and how, I mean, most of the time we talk about the sights, the sounds and the scenes here, but where this really kind of does tie into this podcast, they did all that work to give you the same experience in every place, studio, big theater, little theater. And like you said, you have the numbers there that are like, depending on the size of your theater, here's where you should be setting your volume to get the same experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, I think that's very interesting. And I really think that's how in depth they're getting. I mean, we love to get in depth, but they're getting that in depth as well because they know there are people like us. Otherwise, they wouldn't care. They just put it out like they do on TV, you know, stream it and done.
Oh, yeah. But they're very serious about this stuff. There are multiple committees all over the world working on this thing. There's the ATSC, there's SMPTE, there's EBU here in Europe, and of course, I can't think. It's gone. But I
they're all over. Yeah.
Four. Everyone's working on this stuff, and they're deadly serious about it. And you know, like AES and you know, the Audio Engineering Society, and you know, they're even more interested in this stuff than we are.
So, oh, yeah.
And you know, people are paid to research this stuff. So yeah, that they're all over this. So it's not some hand wavy little thing that some guy in a room has just cooked up. That, you know, they publish papers on all these effects. So yeah, it wasn't a giant surprise that information is out there, but it's just quite hard to find it.
Thank you for doing it.
Yeah, no worries. Well, it's definitely answered some questions that have been bugging me for absolutely years. And you know, I like everyone, you know, I was just dealing with it the way everyone else does, which
right.
is turn it down, turn it up, whatever. But yeah, can get, you know, I don't want to sit there with a remote control in my hand the whole way through the movie, turning it up and down. It's insane. So yeah, it has answered a few questions, but unfortunately, you know, just when I was thinking I had the answer and it was just, oh, turn everything down -6, to then discover that loads of things were, you know, all the discs were still all over the place.
There's always variables. There's always variables. There's always, you know, mastering. Because these things are made by people. And like you, I don't think we said it in the podcast here, but you said before, it's like different authors are mastering, I feel like this is better, and they'll you know what I mean? So it's tuned to taste isn't just in your theater. It's also, there's people that are like, I prefer to mix this way. So you have the mixers are doing the same thing. And that's why it to me, and this is one of the discussions we had before this, why it's so important, even though there's deviations and people can deviate, and I think we kind of argued about it, but I'm like, the fact that we have a reference level and we have an idea, we have these numbers, means you can deviate. Because if you go back to the music industry, nobody's deviating because there's no defined anything deviate from.
Yeah.
So no, nobody's right, wrong, or different. It's just,
there is no baseline in music. But I don't mean drum and bass baseline. I mean, there's no standard that they work to. The standard they work to is, can I get it louder than the other guy's mix, you know, which is insane.
Which I've is funny, you, because I, you've discovered that might actually be going on here in the movie industry as well, though.
Well, yeah, is it? I don't know. That's
It's a
difficult question to ask people.
Because a lot of people think,
tell me.
Yeah, Disney might be doing, everybody thinks Disney's doing it wrong, but how about that on the other side, that they're the only ones doing it right, and everybody's trying to compete with the big mouse ears, and they're trying to be better, much like we know DTS historically bumps the bass, because they're trying to separate themselves from Dolby. And what do people like? They like louder noises. They like more bass. They like this stuff. So they're appealing to the consumer by bumping something to get them to stand out. Right.
And I think the same thing, you know, that the other burning question is the same thing happening in cinemas. IMAX, you were saying the other day, that you find IMAX sound a bit difficult to deal with. Was that you? You were saying.
Oh, yeah.
I find exactly the same thing. And it's not necessarily the level. It's the tonality. There's an IMAX cinema I go to quite a lot. It's just convenient to get to. And I know the picture will be good quality, and that's great. But every time I go, if it's a big action movie, two thirds of the way through, when the action's really going, I've got my fingers in my ears. I'm sitting there thinking, and it is, for some reason, it's that mid range. It's just a bit It's a bit sharp. It's a bit sort of piercing and harsh. And it's that frequency, that like high mid-range frequency that everyone finds irritating, that they seem to be sort of boosting in IMAX. Don't get the same thing in Dolby Cinema. It's loud, but it's bigger and fuller and feels more dynamic. Full range. And And just easier to deal with. So, I know IMAX, they do separate mixes for IMAX. So when there's an IMAX release, whether it's IMAX digital or IMAX 70mm, it's a mix that's specifically done for IMAX theaters. So is the mix louder or is the theater calibrated louder? You know, they could calibrate an IMAX theater to say 87 dB or 88 dB. And it might only be 3 dB louder, but they might think, well, that gives us an advantage, this big sound. But I remember seeing Wakanda Forever in IMAX, and I was struggling towards the end of that movie. It was just shouting at me so loud. And then I go to see Spider-Verse, and it's like, can someone turn it up a bit?
And that's Sony, and you're like, what happened here? And it's there's things that are all over the map.
Yeah.
And, you know, we go back to, I did Ragnarok at the -5. And I felt like it was definitely quieter. So about 2/3 of the way through, I put it up and then I was like, oh, okay. And then I went back and watched a few other few of the scenes again, putting it back at reference level at zero. And you're like, oh, okay. This is a little bit, so I don't know if something went wrong there or none of us know.
You know. Now, is Ragnarok one of the releases that everyone complains about?
Yes. Thor Ragnarok. Yeah.
They're always, it's too quiet and it's kind of, it's at mouse.
It feels, at mouse. It doesn't have the dynamics, but go ahead.
So I measured Ragnarok.
Of course.
And it is quieter. It is quieter than the other Marvel releases. Not dramatically, the dialogue was down at about 75. Let me just check. Yes, 75. So it's 2 or 3 dB quieter than Endgame on the dialogue.
Okay.
However, the big action scenes, the big moments, were hitting 95 and 96, whereas the disc of Endgame was hitting 101.
Right.
So, but it didn't feel quiet.
Yeah.
It was fine. It actually felt about right. However, me being an audio engineer, I got the sense that there was a limiter on the action scenes.
Yeah.
So I got the sense that the dynamics, even though it was loud, the dynamics weren't there. Because I noticed that nothing ever went over about 96. Hang on, sorry.
Right.
Numbers are so small on my piece of paper. 94 and 96. I kept noticing that on all the big moments, my SPL meter would keep hitting 95 or 96, and it never went to 98, 99, 100. And that, to me, said they've put a limiter across this.
Right.
Now, we were talking about compressors earlier, and it's a form of dynamic range control, and you can reduce the dynamic range. That's one kind of dynamic range control. There's another kind called a limiter. And a limiter does something different. I'm sure a lot of people know this, but for anyone that doesn't, a limiter does something different to a compressor. So a limiter doesn't touch the sound at all until it hits a certain level. And at that point, it goes, that's as loud as you're getting.
Yep.
And you get what's called a brick wall limiter. Mm-hmm. It's like hitting a brick wall. You know, when you hit that limiter level, it cannot get any louder. And you usually use limiters as like a protective device. So,
yes.
So, if you don't want to distort something and you know you've only got this much headroom and you must never go louder than that, you set a limiter at about that level and then you know you're pretty much safe. But this sounded limited to me. So that was the thing that stuck out to me. It was quieter, but the big moments felt like they had a limiter on them. And, it seemed to suffer for that, but that certainly wasn't the case with Endgame. So whatever they were doing on Ragnarok, they don't seem to be doing anymore.
Yeah.
Is my guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's, I don't know.
They'd never tell us.
No, I am wondering though, and I've had this theory for a while that Disney is going, they may, because they have a deal with IMAX, they had it, and this is, it was announced 3 years ago, 2018, I think, 2017. Todd and I have talked about it. Todd Anderson and I have talked about it. They had their deal with IMAX, IMAX Enhanced and stuff. And I'm wondering if we're going to start to see someday, I've been hoping, eventually all these movies will be re-released. And yeah, it's a cash grab. Of course, that's what they're in the business of doing, making money. That's what they got to do, right? You re-release them in the DTSX and that limiter comes off. All of that stuff comes off. And they've known this since jump, you know, since they had this IMAX Enhanced idea. And I don't think they're purposely squelching the Dolby Atmos versions. I think that, but what I mean is like in the future when we get these DTSXs, if it ever happens, this is just a theory I have, because I knew, you know, supposedly we're getting them on streaming and stuff, but now they're doing a big physical media push again. They're getting back into that. I'm wondering if this was all in the plan to begin with, and we're going to get a bigger, better DTSX. And wouldn't that turn home theater on its head if all of a sudden these all get re-released in like a DTSX version?
Crumbs, yeah. I mean, I'm very happy with Atmos as a technology and...
Oh, I am. They're both the same, but I mean, you can, but marketing wise, you can say this one's better than this. I mean, they both put out the exact same frequencies. There's no difference between the two mediums, but
the thing is the production world has gone heavily towards Atmos and all the, all the mixing tools and everything people are installing into post-production rooms. Mm-hmm. It's all Atmos. You don't hear about DTS anymore. And I think once you've done an Atmos mix, it will stay Atmos. I think it's probably quite difficult to repurpose an Atmos mix into another format. And I think a lot, unless there's some cash involved and someone wants to, you know, DTS want to pay people to remix it in DTS. Yeah. I don't see anyone doing it. I don't think there's any major advantage. I think any limitations we're hearing in the mixes we're getting on disc are not a function of the audio format.
No.
It's something they're doing.
Yes.
In post-production. And
it's not
doing some titles.
Dolby or DTS or any of that. They're all capable of exactly the same. Yeah. I just wonder if they had an ulterior motive for maybe trying some stuff out. And then they're going to do something.
I certainly hope we get the IMAX ratio versions on disc, please, especially Endgame and Infinity War, which were filmed in IMAX 1.9:1 all the way through, and they suffer really badly in scope. You know, it's the equivalent of a 4:3 crop pan and scan.
Yeah,
of a scope movie, except round the other way. Now we've cropped the top and bottom off, and we need to see what was on the top and bottom. But we desperately need those discs. And maybe Disney will do it. I mean, enough people complain about it all the time. I know I do. Every possible opportunity, because they're so much better. They're so much better in the IMAX ratio. You know, you see so much more of the action. But soundtrack wise, not a problem. Something else I did investigate, because you start to think about things that people complain about and are trying to, you know, what's gone wrong with this, that, or the other. The classic, why is the streaming version not as punchy sounding as the disc? And again, there's a limit to how much I can figure out, but... So, you know, because again, they're not going to
tell me. You've done quite a bit.
They're not going to tell me what they're doing. But what was interesting is I checked out Infinity War, and there was a particular scene I ran over and over and over again and checked against the disc and checked against both streams. And it's not an obvious scene. It's the scene where Peter's on the school bus and notices... You know,
at the
ship coming down in New York. And so he kind of grabs hold of Ned And he says, "Ned, Ned, Ned, cause a distraction." And he, and Ned's in the seat in front, and Peter kind of slaps him on the side of the face.
Yeah.
And the sound of those slaps, it's very specific. The sound of those slaps was very different on different releases. So he slaps him. He slaps him about three times. And then the last time he slaps him, his hand just like skates across his neck slightly. And on the disc, you heard all of that detail. And on the IMAX version on Disney Plus, you heard all of that detail. And then on the standard version, the scope version, non-IMAX, the last little slap you didn't hear. And it had sort of just disappeared. And it's only like a small little detail sound, just the sound of his hand moving across his skin. And it disappeared on the standard one. And that, to me, says that the bit rate is too low. Because the way audio compression, I mean data compression, works is, as everyone says, you know, you sort of throw away the sounds that don't matter, the small sounds, the things that are insignificant, you chuck them away because you don't need to hear them. Whereas the truth is those little sounds make a difference. And yeah, that was, it was that little sound wasn't there on the standard version. So I did some research. So, when we have an Atmos mix on disc, it varies, but it's a, kind of ballpark 5 megabits a second, which is quite a lot. But then we have Atmos works that it on disc, it's usually a Dolby True HD base layer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is uncompressed. It's the original master audio. And then there are Atmos objects for all the overhead stuff and what else. So you get about 5 megabits a second. On Disney Plus, when you get an Atmos mix, and this applies to Netflix as well, it's about 768. It is 768 kbits a second. So it's about a sixth. It's about a sixth of the data rate that we get. But that's because it's a Dolby Digital Plus base layer. So it's compressed audio for the 7.1.
Right.
And then Atmos on top of that. When you get a plain Dolby Digital mix, so non-Atmos on Disney Plus, it's 256 kbits a second.
Oh.
And that's really low. To me. That's I wouldn't wanna have my mix, my 7.1 mix compressed down to 256 kbits a second. You are gonna losing stuff. And so that might be the thing. You might find if you listen to Atmos on Disney or Netflix or wherever, it sounds quite punchy and lively and sparky. And you, and but things that are just plain Dolby Digital may be down at this super low bit rate, and you may lose details, and it may not sound as lively as the disc version. And that's the only thing I can put it down to. They measure the same in terms of volume level. The big bits are just as loud. The quiet bits are just as quiet, but the detail isn't there. You also seem to lose a bit of high frequency, which makes sense, because if you think about it, the high frequency stuff has a lot of little detail in it. If you roll off the high frequency, you can compress it a bit harder. So that Dolby Digital version, the non-IMAX version, didn't seem to have the same amount of high end, the same amount of sparkle in it.
Yeah.
Which again, I think is a function of this low bit rate. So that might explain it. Netflix and everyone has said that 768 kbits per second Dolby Atmos on streaming is perceptually, how did they put it?
Perceptually the same or whatever?
It's impossible to tell the difference between they seem to think it's perfect.
Then how?
It's perfect.
No.
It's good.
It's pretty, it's damn good if you go back to what we used to have.
Yeah, exactly.
But compared to what we have, you can't say it's perceptionally the same or whatever, or imperceivable difference if everybody's perceiving the difference.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the problem is, you know, you and I and the rest of us, we're all listening on big, expensive, high-resolution and high-powered home systems. Cinema systems. Yeah. Other people are watching it on their iPad.
Right.
And, right. And they're not going to notice the difference between, you know, disc and compressed versions. So
yes, to be fair, they're correct. Most people will never hear the difference and don't have the capability to hear the difference. Yeah. It's the few of us, the small percentage of us that actually have enough horsepower, getting back into our space shuttle analogy, horsepower to actually hear the difference, to be able to separate that out. And it's, and like anything else, the bigger you go, the easier it is to see those differences, the easier it is to see the flaws between the two. And, you know,
I'm not sure I see Disney Plus or Netflix or any of the streamers really going much beyond 768. I mean, they might do, but that, you know, the market isn't there. You know, most people won't, I don't have the equipment to hear the difference. So I was listening back to your Takeover Tuesday with Carl Rikiki.
Oh yeah.
From a little while back. And he was, you know, your whole discussion about Kaleidoscape versus streaming and will the streamers suddenly increase the quality? Right. And I've got my doubts. I can't see it happening. I think, you know, if we want that high-end experience, we kind of have to stick with either 4K disc or Kaleidoscape.
Yeah.
Streaming will just be for streaming. General.
Right. Because, and that, I think I, in that podcast, I said to him about, like, he was saying for a while, like, Apple is going to probably end up doing something like this, and they'll come out with a Kaleidoscape version of their own where we can get uncompressed video and sound. And I don't doubt it'll happen someday because the technology will just allow it, right? It'll just become cheaper and easier to do. But that most people for Apple, they're asking Apple to come. The number one demand is that Apple hears is the same demand Kaleidoscape hears. Cheaper, please. Make me a cheaper version, right? Nobody's asking no consumers are asking Apple to come out with a more expensive version. They're the most expensive streaming box out there right now.
I mean, we went to lossless audio for iTunes.
But that's audio. Great,
but the bandwidth involved there is so much smaller than what we're talking about for streaming. You know.
Yeah.
Plus, of course, that lossless is lossless only for purchases on iTunes. I think it is, isn't it?
No,
so they're not really.
I think you could stream it lossless now. I think you can. Well, on iTunes.
Good question.
I don't know. I'm not as into that. I know I have listeners that really are, and they have the, like, what is it, Runes and the other high end streaming or media players for audio. I don't know if you can just flat out stream it, but if you could, it's a lot easier to do because it's a smaller file.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you're talking a 5-minute piece of audio as opposed to a 2-hour piece of audio.
Yeah. Maybe what will happen is if you want to buy a movie on iTunes and download it as you can now, maybe they will bump up the quality of that. In fact, I didn't really look into what kind of bitrate we're getting on audio for an iTunes movie purchase. And maybe it's higher. Yeah, we should stand to reason. You know, the streamers have to watch how much bandwidth they've got and how much data they're pushing out because people are streaming all the time. But if you just download it once and then watch it over and over and over again, it's a different proposition. So, So maybe.
Now you're talking hard drive space that you need on site, right? So there's a lot of that.
iTunes, movies, I'm forgetting here, aren't I? Because iTunes movie purchases.
They're still streamed.
They're still streamed, yeah. But they're massively buffered, aren't they? So there's a big old buffer has to fill up before it will start playing. And so there's the potential for them to be higher quality. But I don't see streaming services like Disney Plus and Netflix. I don't see them improving the quality over where we are now. Not in our lifetimes anyway.
Not yet.
You know, you know, no, the audience isn't there for it.
No, you know, it's not. The demand isn't there. I mean, they're putting it out physically for us. There may be a way to download in the future. I think they will get away. I do think in our lifetime, they'll get away from an actual physical disc. And what you'll go to is a more of a kaleidoscape like system, but it won't be as, you know, won't be as sophisticated, but you'll have a hard drive in your home and you'll buy these movies like an iTunes movie and you'll buy the uncompressed version and download it to your home. And then you'll have it there, but you have to have that on a hard drive somewhere because you're not going to be able to, you know what I mean? So that's what I envision.
I mean, it could be, you know, the competitor could be, does Apple call it iTunes movies?
Mm-hmm.
Is it iTunes movies?
They have iTunes movies. I have both on iTunes television. Yeah. You can buy
all. You know, and it's a good, you know, there are a whole bunch of people who've given up on disc and are just going to iTunes movies.
Yeah.
So then, you know, and I see that and maybe the quality of that. I mean, they're doing 4K and, you know, at the same price as, you know, where you get a free upgrade to 4K, don't you now? If you bought something that was in HD and now it's available in 4K, you now have it in 4K.
Yep.
And it's, you know, that's great. But I'm not fully aware of what the sort of bit rates are for iTunes movies. That's not something I looked into.
Yeah.
I did check Apple TV Plus, mind you.
Yeah.
And was Steve talking about Greyhound the other day on the podcast? I think he was, wasn't
he? Probably, yeah.
Talking about how good Greyhound was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Apple TV, bang on the money. I'm super impressed. So it was quieter than everyone else. Not dramatically, but the dialogue was down at 72, big action scenes at 93. And it felt great.
Yeah.
I got to say, this all started, the thing that really got me going on this, and you were talking about it because you're doing your Mission Impossible rewatch, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. So you were talking about Mission Impossible 1, and I think I was talking to you about Mission Impossible 1 when I watched it on Amazon Prime and streamed it. Because I haven't seen it since the 90s, since it came out. So I was curious to see it again. And of course, last time I saw it, it was on DVD. So I couldn't wait to see it properly for the first time. So I got it on, got my Denon system going, and I put it at reference, or what I thought was reference, and it sounded great. Absolutely great. Like really mind-blowingly good for an old movie. And all the ambience was there and was just right. And the big moments were big, but not so big. I wanted to turn it down, and it was obviously quieter than everything else, but it sounded great at reference. And that's what I just thought, I've never been able to listen to anything at reference before. What's going on here? Is it older movies? Is it, you know, and that's what, that's kind of what got me going on this. But then Amazon Prime. So Steve was also talking about Tomorrow War, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I checked out Tomorrow War. Oh my God. Okay. So the dialogue, quiet, super quiet. Like, oh, this is promising. So Amazon have nailed it. Dialogue was down at 70 dB. Fine. So I set it at reference. The action scenes were up at, 98. 98 dB. So the dynamic range on Tomorrow War between the dialogue and the action scenes was 27 dB. That's like 7-8 dB more than anyone else. That's basically, if you set your volume for Tomorrow War to the right level to be able to hear the dialogue, the action scenes will pin you to the back wall. And maybe, but like, not in a good way, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, just when you think there are standards out there that are going to keep this all under control, Tomorrow War comes along and blows it all out the water. I don't know what you do to watch Tomorrow War. In fact, I've seen some comments on forums and things saying I was trying to watch Tomorrow War and I had to keep turning the volume up and down because I had to turn it up for the dialogue. And then there was an action scene. It was so loud. I turned it down and then I couldn't hear any of the dialogue that came afterwards. And, you know, so tremendous dynamic range is not always a good thing. I mean, we're all looking for dynamic range, but it's not always what you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and like you said, it's like when you get to the television standards, they're trying to keep everybody because they found like if it's too loud, people complain. If it's not loud enough, people don't complain. They'll just turn it up a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
And it's, but if you go from one TV show, say you watch a sitcom and it's at, you know, one level, and then the next one, you're like, why are they yelling at me now? And you get upset. Yeah. Right.
And it's very, they did some tests on that because, as I say, they do tests on all of this stuff to find out people's reaction. And they established what they call a tolerance level.
Yes.
And so they figured out, how much louder it went before people got upset about it and turned the volume down, and also how much quieter it could go before people got upset and needed to turn the volume up. And it's not the same. So it can go 6 dB quieter and everyone's fine. But if it goes 3 dB louder, everyone turns it down. So actually our tolerance to things being too loud is smaller than our tolerance to things being too quiet. Make of that what you will.
Yeah. I know, it's funny. All of these things I've been learning over the last 4 or 5 years through podcasting. And I've worked, I don't have the experience you do. I had none when we started, and I'm trying to get everybody's levels the same, trying to match voice levels within the podcast. But I'm also trying to match my podcast to what in podcasting there are no standards. You don't know, like, how do I get this? And I've read a lot about that over the last 4 or 5 years about like the minus 3 dB, minus 2 dB. Don't go. And then what you're doing, and especially with voice, most of this, our voices are being done in mono so that I can compress this down and put out more of a consistent audio, not just between the difference between me and you. And like every week I go with John, raise your mic a little, or Steve, bring it down, because I'm trying to get everybody as close as possible. But it's also so that when you go to another podcast, you're not like, oh my God, like it's so much either I'm too loud or too, because people go between different podcasts, and I find it in my car. I'm irritated when I'm like, oh my God, why is that so loud? I spend a lot of time listening to our podcast back even before it goes out to people. I think I told you this off air before, but like, I'll like run out to the car with a copy. Play it and then play it back, because in my headset I can hear everything. If there's a mosquito in the room, I can hear that. I know in the car you can't, but it's like there's all of this stuff that I'm just trying to get it so that when the listener plays back, and that's me in my head, that's my OCD. I'm just trying to learn. All this stuff, right? And it's And I know you and I have talked about it in the past about the, you know, getting the audio levels the same, getting the mics, like being able to hear yourself while you're recording. There's all these things that it's all that. And then the compression and the, you know, post-production, where I'm like, okay, I can bring up this person, but I can do this. It was a lot easier when it was just John and I. I had two audio tracks. I just matched them up and bang, dead on. Well, now the way we record now, it's so much simpler. I don't feel the audio is as good, but it's because all three of us are on one audio track and I've got to bring everybody in and try and get everybody level. It's easier at the end of the day, because all I do is I do a couple of things with the audio. I can clean it up a little bit, but it's quicker. It's easier. I used to spend a lot more time on it because I had to learn to. But
yeah. Oh, we should talk about that sometime. I mean, not on air, off air.
Yeah.
It's limited to how much tech stuff people can cope with, but yeah, I can help you out with all that. I get the same thing. I'm always looking for kind of more movie podcasts. You know, it's pretty much mostly what I listen to. And every now and then I read a description of a podcast. Oh, that sounds interesting. And check out someone's podcast. And honestly, if the sound is bad, it's an immediate turn off. It's like if one presenter is much louder than the other, or the volumes keep going up and down, or the whole thing's too quiet, or it's scratchy, like it's recorded on someone's phone, or you know, and I'm done. I'll listen to half an episode and go, I can't take this much longer. So it is important. It's good. It's good that you recognize that. Good for you.
well, that's, I know what I like, and I just try to do the same thing, you know? And even before I had a podcast, these are the things I would notice about the better podcasts, right? And you'd be like, the ones that you were like, oh, this sounds good. And it's like, if it sounds like somebody's in their backyard or in a tin can and they're just like, hey, this, you're like, what are they, what are they doing here? You know, it's like, it's not that easy. You know, it's like, but things happen, mistakes happen. Yeah. So
okay, I'm having a quick flick through. I've got so many pages of notes here. I've discovered so much over the, but I'm trying to remember if there's anything else, any other crucial little nugget I should be telling you about.
I have one question. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have run into something, but, go on, tell me your question.
Odyssey or when we're running our Odyssey, like I shut mine off, it's the Odyssey. Oh, what the hell do they call it? It's when you, if you turn it down, it brings everything. Dynamic EQ, not dynamic volume. Volume is the one where it compresses everything.
Yeah.
For loud, right? But dynamic EQ is where, like, so say you used to lift, say you went down 10 dB below reference level, right? What it does is it takes those sounds that are now inaudible and it'll bump them up so that they're now audible again.
Yeah.
And it's changing the mix. I've shut that off. I've turned that off completely because I hardly ever listen below reference anyways, but I know there is a setting. You can actually set it to don't do any dynamic EQ until a certain point. And I could have set it at -6, but I'm like, forget that. I am just shutting it off and I'm going to listen at the -5.
Yeah. Which what dynamic EQ does, as I understand it, is it tries to compensate for, it's going to get technical again, tries to compensate for the good old Fletcher Munson curves, which you might have heard of. It basically means that our ears become less sensitive to bass frequencies as the volume goes down.
Yes.
So the balance of bass to everything else tends to change, as in the bass seems to get louder as the sound gets louder. Mm. So if you turn your receiver down, you'll also get this sense that the bass has kind of gone a bit. It's like thinned out.
Right.
So dynamic EQ tries to raise the bottom end of the audio signal as you turn the volume down. But as you say, if you turn the volume down, I mean down too much, then you won't hear the dialogue. And the dialogue is, at reference level, the dialogue should be just comfortable, shouldn't be loud. Should just be comfortable. So if you take it much lower than reference level, you're going to struggle to hear what people are saying. So the idea of cranking the bass up is kind of neither here nor there, you know, if you're struggling with dialogue. You know, in a way, I could see that and dynamic volume working together. So you could turn volume down and you would still be able to hear the dialogue, but the loud action scenes won't be quite as loud, but now that the whole thing is quieter, you need a little bit more bass to balance it out.
Right.
So that's the kind of thing that people want to do. Go for it. I found, because I said to you earlier that I've never really used Audacy before.
Yeah.
Because I was quite happy with REW and a SPL meter, and I was quite happy to calibrate it and get it sounding the way I wanted it to sound and measure all my speaker distances myself and all that. So for the first time I did a proper Audacy, full Audacy calibration. I quite liked the end result. It was good. It was amazingly accurate, in terms of getting the SPL right. Cause I started to wonder whether one of the reasons, everyone felt everything was too loud was maybe Audacy was getting it wrong. And maybe Audacy was calibrating a little bit too loud. But no, it nailed it basically at 75 dB. What it didn't get right in my case was crossover frequencies. I got them, it set them all at 40 Hertz. Apart from my upward firing Dolby speakers, which is set at 60 Hertz. And I'm like, this is nuts. Cause I have, these XTZ Cinema M6s, and they're on-wall speakers, but they're sealed, and they only have 5 1/4 inch drivers. They're not big sort of bass monsters at all.
Yeah.
There is no way they do very much below 100 hertz, and I have tested them, and you hear it disappear after about 190 hertz. It's like it's time for the sub to take over at that point. So yeah, no way it should be crossing those over at 40 hertz. That's nonsense.
Yeah, it does. So, it'll set them to large when you want them to small. It'll set them at the... I've always adjusted those crossovers myself. It didn't seem to get that part right, but that's like you said, and I've said that's to a bunch of listeners. They're like, people have asked me like, oh, you should use REW, and I'm like, I did that before we had REW. I ran all that. That's, we didn't have any of this stuff when we were coming up, and I had to do all this stuff. And so now I, the same experience, you kind of went the other way. You just love doing it, so you just kept doing it. But when you, once you come to realize how accurate it is, you're like, I was like, why was I putting all that? Why would I continue to put out that effort in? Because I know how good it is anyways. I'm like, could I maybe tweak it a little bit more? Yeah, but that's not a dollar sign tweak. That's like hours of like working and stuff to get what? I don't know. I don't know if it's that much better if I did it myself. So that's why I'm like, it's just a lot simpler just to run Odyssey. And I trust it because I've heard enough.
Yeah. And it sounded, I mean, I did like the way it sounded on movie stuff. And one of the things Odyssey does by default, which I hadn't quite realized, is it puts a little dip at 2 kilohertz in all the channels, I think. And 2 kilohertz, we were saying earlier on, 2 kilohertz is a funny frequency. We were talking about IMAX and how, you know, how sort of painful IMAX can... Sorry, if anyone from IMAX is actually listening, you know, I like your cinemas. I do like your theatres. It's great. I just don't quite understand what's going on with the sound. But, I'd rather go to your cinema than where I saw Spider-Verse. So great. But I've always found it a bit harsh for some reason.
Yeah.
And Odyssey seems to take 3 or 4 dB out at 2 kilohertz, just a little dip. And I thought it worked really well on movie stuff because it was taking out that frequency that's quite an annoying frequency for humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, if you boost 2 kilohertz in an audio mix, you tend to go, that's a bit harsh. If you get 4K, it sounds a bit brighter, but 2 kilohertz is quite nasty. And so taking that out, did sound quite nice.
Yeah.
Until I went and watched a streaming TV show, and I'm watching it at reference level, and I'm sitting there thinking for 5 minutes, I'm like, I've just realized I'm missing half of this dialogue. I can't quite make it out. And I finally decided, you know what? I'm going to go back now. I'm going to switch Odyssey off, and I'm going to go back to my old setup. And I went back to my old setup, and suddenly I could hear the dialogue. So, because the other thing Odyssey does, it does gently roll off higher frequencies as well. Everything from 6, 7K up. I made some notes on this as well, but I'm trying to do this from memory.
The high-end roll-off, yep.
It's a very gentle high-end roll-off, which is a little bit like what the X-Curve does, although, you know, in cinemas, kind of replicates that a little bit. But the X-Curve is really steep roll-off. It's really crazy, nuts roll-off. But, you know, it will tend to make it a little softer and gentler and easier to listen to. But I discovered with other stuff, with Fear the Walking Dead, I couldn't quite make dialogue out. So I went back to my old setup and it all cleaned up again. So I, yeah, yeah. And the amazing thing was I hadn't realized that, when I wasn't using Odyssey for the last 2 years, with the current speakers I have, I hadn't quite realized I have them flat. I thought I was forgetting I had some PMC on walls before I had these XTZs, and I had to apply a bit of EQ to kind of get them where I wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't realized that I'd switched all the EQ off, and I'm perfectly happy with the XTZs, just completely flat. So I'm back to flat.
Nice.
Great. So Odyssey, it's fine. I spent the 20 quid on the
Yep.
On the MultiQX app.
Yeah, and you can just so obviously you can manipulate everything you want there anyways.
And that's cool. That's being able to do that. I hadn't quite realized that it, as far as I, the thing I found with Audacy, even if you have the app, is you can't, it's quite hard to see exactly what it's actually doing. Because it shows you a measured response, and then it shows you response after Audacy, and you go, no way. There's no way you've taken that response to just a flat line.
To a flat line, right, right.
Yeah, this just, what have you actually done? What have you, what are you, what EQ are you applying? And it's near impossible to find out. And I'm starting to wonder whether they're not doing any EQ at all. And all they're doing is setting crossover frequencies and levels. And the only EQ they're doing is to take that little dip out at 2K and roll off the top a bit. That it might just be like what they call a house EQ curve. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Yeah, that's enough. Oh, I'll try not. We've been going long enough, haven't we? I'm not going to get into that. But some of these post-production places. Also, not only do they set reference level to whatever they need to set, but they some of them also have what they call a house EQ curve.
Mm.
Where they've just EQ'd their system to roll off the high end. And in Dolby Atmos for music, you are supposed to have a house, an Atmos EQ curve in your mixing facility. So there we are with all our home systems all set flat with nice speakers that reproduce the high end. And you're not supposed to. Turns out, because Dolby, in their infinite wisdom, have decided we should roll off the high end a bit. God, you know, it's like sometimes the industry does make things very difficult for themselves. But I had my little play with Audacy, and I'm on the verge of upgrading my system. It's been on the cards for a little while. And now, since the new Denon and Marantz receivers came out, I have a feeling a Marantz Cinema 40 is in my very near future.
Nice.
And I've already changed all my power amps. So, which, you know, is another whole story to get into. So I'm now going to be all Bryston on the bass layer anyway. So some of the Brystons came out of my studio because I'm not using them in the studio anymore. And I compared them with what I'm using now. And I compared them with some other amps that I borrowed and some that I bought. And the Brystons blew them all away. And it was obvious how good they were. So I picked up another 3B SST secondhand. I buy a lot of secondhand gear. I always have done. It's like, you know, if I can find a used one.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, you've seen how much new Brystons are.
Yeah. If you could save money, it's like, I mean, they're amps, right?
Yeah.
If they're working, they're working.
Exactly. And Brystons have this massive, you know, 20-year guarantee on them. So if anything goes wrong, it doesn't matter if you're the fifth owner, they will repair it free of charge for the first 20 years of its life. So, don't think any of my amps are quite 20 years old, but they're getting close.
Wow.
But they're all still going. So I've got 7 channels of Bryston. I now need a bigger rack. That's the only
thing. There you go.
I need to do some furniture building. But so when I get the Cinema 40 and things, I'll play with Audacy a bit more then and see if there's anything I want to do. But I expect I'll play with it and then switch it all back to where it was.
That's how you learn though too. That's how I've learned. It's like you play with it, you do it, you like it, but you don't like it, go back to what you had.
Yeah. I go in phases. I go for like 3 or 4 years not touching anything. You know, generally being happy with the rig I've got and the setup.
Yeah.
But then every now and then you reach a point where
you gotta stop fiddling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you get a little taste of things sounding better than what you currently have, and you go, I got to do that. And I discovered my receiver is fine, but it's very mid-range, and there's better quality to be had by going for something a bit more serious. Yeah. I mean, God, I know that you can go a lot further than a Cinema 40. You know, I'd love to go preamp, power amp, proper pre-pro, Trinov or something like that. But hey, I am still doing this on a relative budget. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yep.
That's, yeah, I don't see a Trinov ever being in my future. Unless I win the lottery.
Yeah. It's, but I don't even know in our rooms. Like, I'd love a Trinov. I still would, just for the sake of having one, I'd love to get there someday. But I don't know if our rooms need it, like in these size rooms. I don't know. To me, it feels like those are meant for larger rooms where you have, you know, further distances for speakers. There's further, you got more speakers, you're doing all this. Yeah. But in the size rooms that we have, you know, it's like I'm looking at the Marantz 10 pre-pro. I think it's
the AV10 and the
AV10
10, isn't it?
And I'm like, to me, I think I can top out at that.
That looks great.
Doesn't it? And I'm like, I've got my 15 channels. I can manipulate that. And it's like, you know, and it's half the price of a Trinov, but it's, you know, probably half the tech of a Trinov. But again, diminishing returns, the difference in sound in my room probably wouldn't be, you know, that I'm not saying the Trinov isn't better. Don't get me wrong. It's better, but it's like, are you going to be like, oh my God, why did I waste my money on that one? No, they're both going to sound fantastic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's, the main thing about the Trinov just seemed to be more output channels.
Yeah.
And that's their selling point, is that if you want a more cinema type system, like a cinema type Atmos system with more than just surround rears and surround side.
Right.
You know, if you want a whole array of speakers all addressable by Atmos, then Trinov's pretty.
Exactly. That's one of the things that one of the advantages of the object based codecs, meaning DTSX and Atmos, is it's scalable to taste. Really, it's supposed to be, right? So like they mix it in Atmos and it's like, yes, we have a base layer of 7.1, you know, for Dolby, but Atmos means that no matter what room you throw that in, the processor in that room will mix this to the speakers that you have. It's not like, oh, all the sound that, you know, left channel or front has to come out of there. Whereas the old codecs, you know, the in your Dolby 5.1, it, like, whatever's told to go to the left channel has to go to the left channel. When you upmix that to more channels, it doesn't know where to send it. It's still going to send it to the left channel or whatever, right? In Atmos, it's like, oh, you want that sound to go right down the side of the room, and you have a speaker every 2 feet down the side of the room. The processing is the in-house processing is going to take the mix processing and say, boom, 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 all the way down the side of your room. And and that's quite literally like when you see the demo and they go, doom, 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 doom.
Yes. Yeah.
It does that so that it can go down the side of a room in that many speakers. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, and I think the DTSX Pro just caught up. It's up to 32 or 64 channels in home. Okay. That's what those can do. Okay. So like Dolby has had that. Dolby Atmos has been up to 64 channels, I think, since the beginning, or 32 or whatever. And that's why when you hear like a Trinov, like it can process those channels and and mix it to your room. And that's the other advantage of object based, that I have the same system. Our rudimentary versions of this, we're all limited at the 15 channels and below, or, you know, 11 channels and below. But the idea of Atmos is to actually be like, you can have as many as you want. And then be like, and then your processor should be able to do that. Our processors can't do that because they're only limited to the 11 or 15 or whatever we have.
Yeah.
So.
And the classic thing is you get limited to 4 overheads. Yeah. Front left, right, and rear left, right.
Right, or and, six, and, or yeah, but now in
there's the not many receivers like, that will do. Yeah, it's not many receivers will do a 7.1.6 system.
Right,
but most of the pre-pros will do.
Yes,
will do 7.1.6, and then of course Trinov, you just keep going. But one of the other things I ran across in all the research was a lot of theaters. Like private theaters that are in between like a full commercial cinema and a home cinema rig. So people who've, you know, like Hollywood types who've built mm-hmm. a big screening room in their house. And so in terms of volume, in terms of cubic feet, the room that they're using is, right. is bigger than we're talking about. So they're calibrating to a slightly higher SPL, mm-hmm. but not as high as a full theater. Mm-hmm. But then they're also installing bigger systems, and then they're putting in Trinovs and having an array mm-hmm. of surrounds. And, you know, because if you're a successful Hollywood director, you've got yeah. to impress your friends somehow, haven't you? Keep up with the Spielbergs.
Yep.
You know, you may not be projecting 35 millimeter, but, or maybe you are, I don't know. But, yeah. but you know, you certainly have the sound system to match now.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, whereas most of us, I mean, you know, you might be able to have sort of four or five surrounds on each side of your room. But you know, if your room is my size, which is about 15 foot by 13 foot, there's no space for them.
Yeah, you end up with redundancy. Like yeah. you can't differentiate between them. So why have that many, no. you know? Yeah. And it's like, I want front wides. And that's mm-hmm. about, I want six overheads and I also want front wides. And that's about as far as my room. To me, it's like anything more than that until they invent those floor speakers that I want so that we have the next layer, the lower layer. So we go in over the head. Let's go under the body now. Yeah. Until they do that, that's it. But again, mm-hmm. with Atmos, you could do that. All you have to mm-hmm. do is put the speaker. If the sound's supposed to be down below you, it'll go down below you.
Yeah.
You know?
One of brings me on to one other thing I was looking at was, you know, so this concept of reference level and things being too loud or not loud enough, but mostly too loud, and sound absorption, and which was always your point, is mm-hmm. like if you have a treated room, you can go louder, you know, and it's less irritating. And if it's, you haven't treated the room, it's harder.
Louder.
And the reasoning that everyone seems to have landed on, which I would totally sign up to, is that it is high frequencies that we find annoying at high levels. And mm-hmm. obviously, if you treat your room, it's the high frequencies that you will kill off.
Right.
Because again, what you hear in a room is a product of not just the speakers, but a product of how it reflects off all the walls and how it comes back at you.
Right.
And if you're putting a lot of ordinary absorption around the room, you will pull out a lot of high frequencies. And so, you know, if there's less high frequency coming back at you from the walls and the ceiling,
right.
then you might tolerate higher SPLs. Doesn't mean that calibrating to 85 is still right, but you'll be able to cope with the big bits.
You'll be able to get better. There. Yeah, yeah.
But one of the other things that happens with if you're building a dedicated room and you're putting a lot of treatment in, the other thing that tends to happen is that, you know, we're trying to make them kind of soundproof, not to annoy other people in the house. Yeah. And one of the byproducts you get of doing that is that you reduce the noise floor in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, suddenly there is no background noise in your room. It's like deathly quiet.
Right.
And that actually means that you can run the system quieter.
Yep.
Because one of the reasons they established this reference level and they established dialogue at the volume that they do is because they have to overcome the background noise in your typical theater. Mm-hmm. So that might be external noises. And in the old days, they weren't as well, I don't know. I've seen some pretty badly soundproofed new cinemas just really where you get to listen to the movie right. that's being played next door as well as your own one. If you can reduce that background level and also reduce reflections, because mm-hmm. they kind of discovered that they needed a certain amount of sound level in the room just to be able to combat the amount of reflections that were coming back, mm-hmm. the amount of reverberation that was happening in a big theater. So they realized that if you ran the system quiet, it was kind of hard to pick out the dialogue out of all the, not just the ambient sound, but the reflections of the cinema sound itself and the reverberant field. So they turn the volume up. But if you can get rid of that reverberant field and also isolate your room and get the background level down, you can run quieter.
Yeah.
Again, you know, just, you know, notch it down a bit. So it's funny how all this stuff interacts. It's the more you get into it, the more complicated it seems to get.
And what's funny is like everything you're saying there about you bring the noise floor down. It's, you know, all that. It's also, I mean, think about how they come up with noise cancellation, right? They're literally matching the frequency so that if you have the exact same frequencies playing against each other, they cancel each other out so you can't hear it. Mm. Right. And the same idea in your room is if you have a noise floor of, say, ambient sound, like say you have your vents are going and you have people walking around outside or anything else is going on, and it's all these things are going on. So your level of attention has been raised. So you're canceling to get yourself into that movie. You get engrossed. You're doing almost like your brain is doing a noise gate of everything below here, because that's taking me out of the movie. So I'm going to eliminate everything below here, which would be your vent. It's like, I don't even hear this stuff. Like when I'm watching a movie, do I hear the fan on my projector? No, it's still there, but my brain has shut it off. Right. Yeah. So it's basically my brain has done its own noise gate and said anything below this, we're not going to hear. Well, if there's anything below that in the movie, I'm not going to hear it because my brain has canceled it out. Yeah. So you're right. It's like as much as you can eliminate in the room allows you to hear those things. Wow, this is so much more detailed. What'd you do? It's like I turned off everything else. Mm. That's all.
Yeah, because it's not just about dialogue. It's also you want to hear all that ambience, all that sort of background stuff that's behind the dialogue, all the atmospherics. Yeah. And they are, if the dialogue's at 50, then the atmospherics is at 70, sorry, then the atmospherics are down 50, you know, down there, the wind in the trees or the rain or the, you know, whatever. And if that is below your ambient sound level, you know, of projector fans or AC or whatever, then suddenly to get the full effect, you're going to have the volume up a bit higher to be able to hear that ambience. But then as soon as you have the volume up higher, the big moments are starting to hit 102, 103, 105 dB. And it's pretty loud.
If you can, and again, like we were saying before, where you're in a large room, 85 sounds one level. Take that 85 into a little room and it's going to sound louder.
That's the solution. That's the solution to all our problems. I've decided we just need to build really big
rooms.
Simple. Why not think of that?
But that it's perception is reality. But at the same time, like you were just saying, it's like if you eliminate everything, you turn it all down, you're still going to feel like that movie had a huge explosion. Even though you might be 10 dB normal where you were, because your baseline audio being the dialogue or whatever, you've been paying attention to this baseline for so long now that all in the movie, I mean, and now all of a sudden that explosion, it's still the difference between the baseline and the explosion. That never changes. The dynamic never changes. Just how you move the volume level is what brings it up. So what you want to do is you just want to get used to and enjoy that. You don't want to ruin the dynamics by using any of that other compression stuff, but you want to, you know, and that be able to experience it. And the lower your noise floor is in your room, there's so many things, but it's, you know, and that's what makes this fun. You just keep, there's always something to work on in our rooms.
Yeah. So, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
My idea of working on it is to build a new house. That's the only way I can improve it from where it is now.
Exactly. Well,
not doing very well on that front at the moment. Oh my God.
Chipping away.
I've just bought a stump planer.
Planer.
Have you seen a stump planer?
Yeah, you cut.
It's like a big drill, like a big Forstner bit, but it's about a foot across and it goes in an excavator and it just drills down through a stump.
Through a stump.
My God, that's taken me weeks to get my hands on one of those, but that's the only way. It's the only way I can deal with this tree.
Oh man,
I know. I haven't even started building. I haven't even knocked the old house down yet, and it's already a nightmare job.
I don't want to jinx anything. I'm getting there.
I hope yours is making progress. How's your daughter's house? Is that
doing well? Where are you with that?
Have you got your toolboxes back yet?
No, I've got half of them back. I brought a few home just this weekend. I had to do some stuff around here. We're getting there. She's all living, her living spaces are all done. The only thing I have left to do is I got to install a countertop, and then I have to do their walk-in area. Their mudroom has to do the complete thing, but that's something. But their living space, they're loving it. All painted, trimmed, everything.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So, yep, plugging away. I was supposed to work there this weekend, but they were like, let's take this weekend off because it was 4th of July weekend and stuff. But
Of course. Oh, yeah. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you. That's when this comes out, actually. The fireworks from this podcast, it's coming out tomorrow morning, 4th of July. Yeah. So
be drowned out by the other fireworks, by the real fireworks. Were you saying you had some huge announcement?
What do you mean?
Or am I going to be editing for today? Well, because we've sort of inadvertently been trailing.
Well, my huge announcement was that I'm now not at zero. I'm at minus five.
Oh, okay.
I've dropped down to minus five, which I've been, zero, zero. And I'm actually going to go to minus six now because I want to be accurate. And, with this new information, that's what I'm going to do. I think this is great information, and I don't.
Here you go. If anyone tells you you're doing it wrong, tell them that Brian Long at Skywalker Sound said this is the correct way to do it.
There you go.
Don't mention me. No one knows who I am. But blame him. Tell him it was all his idea.
There we go.
Yeah. No. I mean, I don't know. I recalibrate now that I'm off Odyssey. I've recalibrated my system to 79.
Okay.
So what I did, if anyone wants to do the same sort of thing, is I set the master volume to plus six, then measured 75 dB.
Okay.
With you can use the internal test tones, obviously. But I was using Spears Munsell, actually. I was using Disc 3. They've got the pink noise tones on there at minus 30 dB that pop up in each speaker. So I used Spears and Munsell, set the master volume to plus six, calibrated each speaker to 75 dBc. And then that means that when I set it back to zero, I'm calibrated to the correct reference level. I'm going to live like that. So I can just put my volume at zero. And
nice.
In theory, I'm in the right place. But as we've discussed, unfortunately, you're still going to have to adjust the volume to taste.
Always.
Do you know one of the loudest movies I found on Blu-ray?
What's that?
Incredible Shrinking Man.
Really? Film.
Have you ever seen that? Classic 50s sci-fi. Yeah. Amazing film. Well, it was when I first saw it when I was 12. I haven't made it all the way through. But yeah, there's an Arrow Films release on Blu-ray of The Incredible Shrinking Man. And super loud, ridiculously loud. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was going to be quiet because you imagine old movie quiet, new movie massive. No, they've mastered it super loud. So unfortunately, you can set it to reference and you're still going to have to turn it down for some films. So I feel like we need to start a database. We should start a
There's a few of them.
Movies.
But there were some for compensate for Dolby. Not Dolby, for Disney. Because people were like, you got to go to plus this. You got to plus. Yeah. And I'm like, maybe with this new information, we got to turn the others down. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not saying which way is right. I'm just saying that let's not jump to conclusions just because. But, like this one better, so this has to
must
be wrong.
Be better, right?
No, that's not always the case.
No, it doesn't work in music at all. No. In music, if you go back, if you own CDs or buy CDs, go to the local charity shop and pick up some CDs for a dollar. But if you pick up anything from the early to mid-90s, you'll discover they're miles quieter than a modern CD. Mm. You know, like miles, like 10 dB or something quieter. So when you put it on, you have to turn the volume up. And you will find that they generally sound better.
Yeah.
So louder is not better. Louder is not better. The quieter ones, they have more dynamics. They preserve more of the original sound. And you'll find the classic one is Let Love Rule, the first Lenny Kravitz album.
Yep.
Sounds super quiet. Just turn the volume up a bit on your hi-fi and enjoy it. My sort of rule of thumb is that with some music, the more you turn it up, the better it sounds. Until you put certain CDs on or whatever, where you find the more you turn it up, the worse it sounds. And the more you want to turn it back down.
Right.
And that to me is the giveaway of like an over-compressed, over-limited. Yep. It's like you just go, oh, I don't want to listen to this any louder. It's really annoying. And it tends to sound really good on like a little Bluetooth speaker or something.
Yep.
But when you get it on a big system, it's like, ooh.
The details aren't there.
Doesn't sound that good. Yeah, exactly that.
The details that you want to get out of the big system aren't there.
Yeah.
Just everything's loud. Yeah. Oh, what the hell good is that?
Yeah. Check out some 90s stuff. It sounds amazing. Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely.
Paul, thank you for all the work.
On this one, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I think, honestly, in my opinion, I think a lot of people are going to be, they're going to respond well to that. I think people are going to like this information, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's good information and it helps people that most people can't get to reference level. And I think we've just found out why.
Yeah.
The information's been out there. Just how do you ask that question? How do you know? Who do you talk to? And I can't thank you enough for doing the work and the research and everything that you did to get us there. It was awesome.
It's been fascinating.
It really has.
And I haven't finished yet. I'm going to be one of those guys taking an SPL meter to the movies with me all the time now. I'm going to be that irritating guy. Mine has a backlight on it, I'm afraid. So it's not my, it's not my phone lighting up. It's my SPL meter. I was worried I was going to get thrown out at the cinema, actually. Because some guy goes in there with something that looks like a microphone and starts switching it on. But then you forget that no one's really paying attention in any of these cinemas. Might be different in Dolby Cinema, but so I'm going to keep investigating this and trying to get to the bottom of it. But so I think the takeaway is references at -6 if you've calibrated your system normally. Yeah. And also don't worry about it because it's all over the place anyway. But gives you a starting point, doesn't it? The crazy thing is that generally everything that's been happening to home cinema and reference level and disc mastering has been making stuff louder. So if you think that we're 6 dB too loud at reference level already, and then some of the discs are mastered up to 10 dB too loud, is it any surprise that no one can listen to anything at reference level?
Right.
Think how loud The Incredible Shrinking Man would be if I left my receiver at reference level. It would be blisteringly loud. So. Bear in mind this new concept of reference level being -6 in our money, and then be prepared to turn it down from there. I'm afraid, but
that's funny.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Paul. And I'm going to warn you before we end, don't hang up because I don't want to lose a minute of this because we have to let it finish downloading, but, that will do it for today.
Cool.
I'll be back later today. If you're listening to this on the 4th of July, Steve and I will be back at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So we're starting early in the morning. We'll probably talk about this a little bit. But everybody have a great week. Thank you. Send in your comments because I'm sure there'll be plenty. Let me know what you think. Try it out and we'll talk again. But everybody, Paul, thank you so much. And thank you everybody for listening. Go push play.
Yeah. Turn your volume down 6 dB and then press play.
There you go. with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.